Everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on January the 6th, 2016. We're going to miss saying 2015. I liked saying that.
It rolled off the tongue.
Yeah. Certain years are good for that, you know. 2000, 2001, 2002, 2005. 2016 doesn't sound as good as 2015.
No, but we're not going to have like a cool year like that for a while too. I guess 2025. That sounds like a video game, like in the future, like in the year 2025, something, you know. Then the aliens attacked.
I think 2021 will be pretty good. 2020 sounds like, you know, an advertisement.
Well, then you're gonna have to get caught up with all the people being like, oh, it's 2020 and 2020's vision and all those sorts of things.
And it's like, oh, come on, you gotta have 2020 vision. Don't wear glasses, dude. Or, I don't know what the fuck
that's
I'm going
actually,
with that.
That's actually the year that we all come down on people wearing glasses. It becomes like a genocide. We put you in camps.
It's not cool anymore.
You start becoming more socially outcast than before. Nick, to a happy 2016.
Yeah,
I can drink on YouTube, right?
I don't know.
Grape juice, then.
I've seen
like grape juice. That's clearly not purple in any way, shape, or form. Yeah,
I've seen all sorts of people do like drunk challenges on YouTube, so I'm sure that it's fine.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure that kind of stuff's like kosher on it. Yeah, I don't want to. I just don't want us to get in trouble or anything like that. So
yeah, just don't play copyrighted music, basically.
Yeah, no problem. Oh, hey, I can smoke pot on YouTube, right? I don't have a problem with that either.
The fuck is that?
It's a pipe. It's a pipe, but clearly I'm just too broke to get lighters, and I just have like an old like fucking like grill lighter as I'm using as my lighter now. You know, no, it's all kosher. We're kicking it off into a new year, Nick. This is my prop area over here now. That's where fun things are gonna come out of. This entire year, you're gonna see crazy stuff.
So. It's the 2016, although we are not yet doing our traditional annual manga recap, because we have manga to talk about this week, so
don't have manga next week.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about the annual recap next week, when we don't have, you know, 2 hours of content sitting there waiting for us. So, the yearly review thing won't be until middle of January, but I think that I've done stuff like at the end of January because it just
isn't really even in the middle of January. It's going to be what, January 13th when we do it,
right?
And I think what, New Year's Eve was on a Thursday, so I mean it wasn't like we could even. Today's the 6th, and this is the first chance we've had to do a weekly manga recap in the new year, so I don't think it's that bad.
I think we'll get it.
They shouldn't complain, right?
Especially since we put out that awesome radio play for the bonus podcast. If you guys are not champion level subscribers, you're missing out. I'm just going to show that a little bit. We did a radio play that came out just in time for the new year called Why Me Scrooged, which is basically a Bleach Miss Carol in which very slightly fictionalized version of myself.
I like to consider it like an alternate timeline, like Earth 2.
Basically. It's only slightly different, honestly. There's not too many differences, because Chris knows me well enough that there are all sorts of references to my actual past, at least. So, visited by the three spirits of Bleach Miss Past, Present, and Future in an attempt to rekindle my love of Bleach. Did they succeed? Well, you'll find out in about half an hour. Although there was one part that I really appreciated, which was something that I've talked about before, which was you noted that basically if it hadn't been for the fact that I, you know, first started to like Bleach, I would have never, like, really started to like manga, and because of that, my life would actually be really different. You know, as much as I rag on Bleach, there are some things that I am kind of grateful to towards it for. For example, we wouldn't be friends without it. You know, started doing that, we wouldn't be doing this podcast. Obviously, there's a whole bunch of people I would have never met. And with that said, there's one very special person I want to make a note of, which is actually my girlfriend, who I never would have met if it weren't for this podcast, if it weren't for, you know, doing manga reviews and stuff. And it's our third year anniversary. So.
Oh, congratulations!
Happy anniversary, Nicole. I love you.
Oh, that's beautiful. I cried this week because Tom Coughlin Tom Coughlin told Eli Manning that he didn't fail him, that they failed together, and that he was the son he always wanted. So they both have very touching things. Yes, it's
That's adorable.
Eli Manning did like an interview at like the locker after the game. Or I think it was like the Monday afterwards, and he was like, "We failed Tom Coughlin, and it's you know, it's unfortunate." And then they had Tom Coughlin's like farewell press comp, like press and the junket, whatever conference, whatever it would be called. And it's like him doing his whole thing. He goes through and kind of named a bunch of people to thank and all that sort of stuff. And they get to questions, and they get to one that's like, how do you feel Eli will be able to do going forward with the new system? He's like, he'll be fine. Well, hold on, let me get my Tom Coughlin voice. He'll be fine. He's exceptionally bright. He's exceptionally talented. He's everything you would want in a son. And then he turns to Eli specifically and looks at him. He says, "You didn't fail us, Eli. You didn't fail me. We are a team. We fail together. We do it. It's us. So don't you ever put that on yourself." And like, there is a shot that like on some versions that cuts to Eli's face during it, and it's like him doing like the manly soldier, like. Like, just barely holding it together, and you're like, oh my god, this is the guy who barely smiled when he got handed the fucking Vince Lombardi trophy. Like, this is ridiculous.
It's like, it's that emotional.
But anyway, you definitely should pick up the Bleach Christmas Carol if you're not a champion subscriber on Patreon. Yeah. I would say it's one of the finest things I think we've put out. So much so, people are clamoring for more.
We might do another one. it was a lot of work on Chris's parts.
That was right up to the wire.
Yeah, you should be proud of that, man. You did a good job.
It was team effort.
So, with those two heartbreaking things... Well, not heartbreaking.
Yeah, one of yours was very sweet and emotional. I don't know why I decided to bring it down by being like, oh, it's 12 years and they're separating... It's like he's dying.
They only won two Super Bowls.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh. As Nick, like, turns around to his, like, replica Vince Lombardi trophy case that's still empty, you're like,
what are you talking about? We won one.
Yeah, but that was, like, 13 years ago.
I feel like it's like this thing that's, like, got openings for 10 trophies, but there's only one.
Yeah, you're like, it's so unbalanced.
I'll totally fill the rest of it out. I could just, like, make more fake replicas and pretend the Bucks won them.
It's like a sign, like a banner that hangs across your room that says Freeman forever. It was like, you'd be like, no! He was the chosen one! He was supposed to bring talent back to Green Bay, or Tampa Bay.
Oh, God. Anywho.
Such a long, rambling beginning. It's like, I'm like,
time... It wouldn't be Weekly Margarita Camp without one.
I'm like, time coding, like, 13 minutes in, podcast itself starts.
Okay. So, let's talk about our first Shonen Jump and Fairy Tale of 2016. Let's kick off the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, why don't we?
Yes.
Alright, let's start like we normally do with some Black Clover, which is on page 44.
Nick, it clearly says pages Jump. 86, 87. You're ridiculous.
Not on Jump, but I actually literally made that mistake while I was scrolling. I was like, it's page 44. Wait a minute, I just scrolled to page 40. Fuck!
God! Fine! Just like slapping things off your desk in anger.
The chapter title is Siblings, and it features Gaush and Marie. Really actually kind of looking... weird picture because it makes Gaush look very bulky.
Makes I don't know if you got an impression.
Well, it's a dour perspective because he's like stepping on the point of view of you know, the reader,
and it's his little sister next to him, so of course right. He seems giant compared to her, but it does seem like a titan is stepping down on me.
But his shoulders do look very broad in the picture. I guess it's just the way that his Magic Knight's cloak is fitting on him combined with the perspective, but he looks very large. I don't know. Last time, of course, Gaush abandoned everybody except Marie because, well, you know,
what else was he going to do?
Well, you know, Because, you know, Sally, the crazy scientist girl, had turned one of the creepier of the two evil siblings into a giant mud monster by basically overflowing his magic. And now Asta is trying to defend the kids against them, and sister or mother, I don't know what she is, Therese is there also trying to help.
It's sister. I don't think they're... Well, I mean, if it follows the Catholic convention of nuns, it would just be sister, because I don't think... I think the only mother I ever heard of is Mother Teresa, which I think is...
Okay.
And this is where...
There's Mother Superiors of some places, isn't there?
This is where those sisters, if they were listening, were like, how do you not know this? Because if it is Catholicism and they're Mother Superior... I don't think Mother Superior is a Catholic thing, so my knowledge on this is probably just off. But wow. I believe it's just sister.
Okay. So... She creates a guiding light leopard with her flame creation magic, and she says, a few of you at a time, ride that to escape. It's made of fire. Is that going to work?
I guess I didn't pay enough attention to this, but that is, like, a rather interesting notion. Like, yes, I create mounts of fire. Ride this out, children. You're like, interesting. This is a rather inventive use for fire.
So, basically... their plan is to just, you know, hold off Sally and the mud monster and until they can get the children out of the cave. And in the meantime, Baro is just going absolutely berserk. He even tries to attack his own brother. And Asta, of course, steps in to protect him. And he gets really pissed off and so the guy's like, why'd you save me? And Asta says, you haven't taken responsibility for this yet. And until you do, I'm not letting you die.
He's like a cool 90s kid in your version. He's drink Mountain Dew! Super Nintendo, kids! Reading Rainbow! Woo! Winner, 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 woo!
That's also 80s, but whatever.
Also, this is somewhat tangential, but I thought I should mention it. Our bonus pod for this month for Champions is going to be an episode of Weekly Manga Recap Lives. So if you're listening to this now, it's when we voice act chapters from Shonen Jump or Fairy Tail. And if you have any favorite chapters from the past, like, 3 months or so, because that was the last time we did it, if we have any favorites from that time, let us know what those are. We'll then pick kind of, like, the best from each series and then put that up in a poll, and then, like, the best 4 or 5 will be the ones we do in the episode. So, just know if you have any favorites.
You're reminded of that by my voice acting interpretation, I guess.
Yeah, I was like, if there's a fucking Black Clover chapter, that's what Asta voice sounds like. So, I caught you eating.
Yeah, you did. Fuck you. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Nick. I should have timed it better. This is the advantage we have with video, is I should be supporting you as your co-host to kill air while you're chewing.
See me eating.
I looked away. I was like, Asta has a really cool expression. I'm like, and then I turned back in like horror. Like, oh, no, Nick's still eating!
So... Sally and Baro fight against Therese and Asta. There's not a whole lot going on, really. There is a bit where Therese interferes, and Sally says, I'm not interested in an old lady who uses weak, dried-up magic. And she says, don't underestimate old hags.
There's a thing. This is the second character in this series who's done, like, an old hag thing. Because there was also that life-stealing witch who was just like, don't call me old! It feels like there's two levels of female characters in this. There's, like, the young-ish mage, and then there's just old bitches. Old hag.
Don't give a fuck anymore.
Oh, fuck, what's that that line she has from that movie where it's just like, we're young, face it, old lady, we're young and we're hot, or something like that. It's Kathy Bates. It's like trying to pull into a spot, and a bunch of like young chicks pull into her spot first, and they're like, face it, we're younger and faster. And like they laugh as they start walking away. So she just fucking like rams her car into theirs like 8 times, and she's like, face it, girls, I'm older and I have better insurance. And, like, drives away. No, he's stuck with me. It's like, she's
Jesus
got that
shit together. What a psychopath.
She'd had enough, Nick. She'd had too many.
Old enough to give a fuck.
Yeah. I just saw a note. There's a panel here where Sally is, like, firing an attack, and it's done from, like, the weirdest up-shirt perspective, where you're just like, how do you... It's one of those ones I'm like, where's the camera supposed to be in this?
And also, her skirt is, like, flying underneath her to prevent a panty
shot. Well, no, remember, it's shorts. They're shorts.
Like, it looks like legs. Oh, no, yeah, we did establish that.
Yeah, they are pants legs. But it is,
that's
like...
That's probably how he can get away with that perspective.
But she is not wearing a bra neck. That is... That seems quite...
That's extremely evident at this point.
That seems quite dangerous in this magical fighty world.
All right, if you are a fighting magic warrior woman, and you go into battle and you're not going to wear a bra, that is not the top you want to be wearing for that. Okay.
Especially when it's already been cut open a little bit, too. This is Janet Jackson about to happen all over again.
Well, even without that, though, I mean, like, it doesn't provide support, you know? You're going to be, you know, running around and you're going to be attacking stuff. Your boobs are going to hurt by the end of the fight, okay?
You know what?
If you've got anime boobs.
I may have just figured it out, Nick. She's, like, crazy, kind of, like, mad scientist lady. She's probably wearing, like, scientifically designed super clothes. She's like, I know it looks like, hold on, what would Sally sound like? I know it looks like I don't have properly fitting clothing, but in fact, these clothes are aerodynamically designed to perfectly contorture my body. And, boosh. Problem solved.
No one could possibly find her sexy if she has that voice.
It's why she wears a top like that, Nick. She's like, I gotta pick up your boys somehow.
Happy sheet.
Yeah, you should bring your boys to the yard. You show up a lot of death ties.
So before we got on our third tangent, I know.
It's like 12 minutes of the fucking Welch and the Black Clover. We're on page 3.
I was actually going to point out that Sarissa actually says, as you age, the magic you can generate internally weakens, but the power to work with the man that dwells in nature can be increased at any age, and I have years of experience combined with technique. So, apparently, young mages actually have the most power in this world, just offering some more explanation on stuff. Which might actually also tie into why Clarissa? Whatever, the one witch was so obsessed with being young then.
It's also, like, sort of an allegory of physical attributes, too. Like, when you're younger, it's just easier, you're better at it. But still, when you get older, you've accumulated technique and skills that allow you to kind of keep up with them. That's how we got Peyton Manning still playing football at, like, 41 years old and, like, 3 broken necks.
And then eventually he was just like, I don't have no arm strength no more. I'm just going to do some more commercials.
Yeah, he's just like, so I'm just going to do 18 commercials a day.
Holy shit, my shoulder hurts. Oh, God.
I was actually going to continue on that, but I was like, there are 8 tangents in the Black Clover at this point. We've got to keep going.
Gauche. We cut to Gauche. Marie, of course, wants him to go back, and he's like, nope, taking you back to town where it'll be safe. And he actually, analyzes the situation rather objectively, which is, my magic doesn't work on her. There's a powerful monster there, and if I tried to fight them, you would be in danger. So, as long as you're safe, I don't give a shit. So I'm just going to protect you. And goddammit, Chris, I can't believe you actually called this. There is a tragic backstory that justifies Gauche's obsession with his sister.
Of course there is, Nick. I'm right every time I talk about this series. Rebecca is never going to be an important character, Nick. She's never going to come back.
Her brother is in this chapter, but she isn't.
She's never coming back, though. They're going to drop her off to a pair. It's going to be like the nanny from Muppet Babies. We're just going to see her socks when they drop the kid off at the door. And she's like, thanks for bringing my brother back. And she'll pick that up, and then that'll be the end of it.
You gotta be like, what happened to her sister? She died of cancer.
Yeah, super cancer. It was pretty sudden.
Okay. So in the flashback, it turns out that Gauche and Marie were the inheritors of the House of Adlai, a distinguished noble family, but their mother and father then died in an accident, and someone else was named as the successor in their will, and he just tossed them out. And he also had a shitty porn stash, according to this one close-up of his face. What is it with people with terrible mustaches in this series? There's going to be some heroic character with an awesome set of facial hair in this series, but until then, facial hair has to be shitty, and it means you're evil.
You start up a Tumblr, Nick, about the social injustice of bad mustaches and Black Clover.
Also, there's, like, only white people. What the fuck's up with that? But anyway.
Seriously, better mustaches. When?
Come on. Let's have a black person with an awesome mustache. Yeah, seriously.
Well, you can get both. And then put them in a Monopoly game. I will note, though, I'm expecting this character to probably come back later on. This, like, villainous person who kind of kicks Gouch out of the house.
I do hope so.
Because kind of, like, leaving him in shadows leaves also the idea, like, we can do whatever we want with this guy later on, too. It seems like a good antagonist if you tend to make Gouch any kind of, like, reoccurring character in the series. Which I hope they do, because he actually seems to be one of the more interesting Black Bulls.
And then we get some insight into, basically, how why Gouch is, you know, a former prisoner. Because he resorted to robbing people, he resorted to using his magic to mug people in order to get food so that he and Marie could survive. And he, you know, just said, like, I'll do whatever it takes, no matter what. Marie is everything to me. She's all I need. That's all I care about. I'll do anything it takes to protect her. And now, of course, still turning that into, you know, this weird guy who bleeds from the nose when he thinks about her and beats up anyone she associates with. But it is a pretty good backstory.
Yeah, it gives him justification, which is the something he desperately needs.
The connection between his current character and that backstory is a little bit still shaky, but the overprotectiveness and the focus on her is justified, at least. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Gouch just says, you know, it's like, so you're all I need. Why do I care about other people? And Marie punches him in the chin.
She even has, like, a crying sound, like, hey, yeah!
But she says, like, I hate it when you're so uncool like this. And she says, you know, you are right. You know, there are a lot of people who did do mean things to us. But the kids from the church and Sister Teresa are different. They're all good people. Everyone's lives are connected. We're who we are because they're here. And besides, the Magic Knights are supposed to protect everybody, aren't they? I really like that you're a Magic Knight, so please stay the cool big brother I'm proud of. So, aww. It's nice.
Sweet. Has your little sister ever told you that? Like, be the, you're my big, cool, older brother?
Not in a decade.
But she ever do it, though? Like, because that's, like, look, when this, when Marie is, like, you know, 10 years older and she's, like, a teenager, she's like, fuck off, Gouch, you stupid mirror dork, get away from me.
This is even creepier now that I have boobs. Seriously, stop it.
She's like, I'm going to a concert. Fuck off, old dude. You dork.
Stop beating up my boyfriend.
But, like, no, like, when she was a kid, you got, like, that moment where she's like, you're awesome, my big brother Nick.
When she was as old as Marie, I think she felt that way.
That's pretty now sweet.
Now it's blocked behind sarcasm.
She's like, Nick, mustache. You're like, what? That was a joke, right? You love this, right? This is all I have. Note, 19th tangent for this one. Gouch's face after she punches him really reminds me of Sanji. I mean, part of it's just because he has a similar kind of haircut to Sanji, but just the way the expression's drawn really feels like something right out of that Oda would draw.
So, they come to the exit to the cave, and of course, Marco is still there. Still cold. Poor kid. And so, Marie greets him, and she turns back to Gouch and says, come on, go back and save everybody else. And Gouch notices, you know, that Marco is wearing the robe that Asta gave him, because Gouch, of course, went on ahead before they stopped there. And so he's like, yeah, Asta loaned it to me and said it would make me brave. I'll protect Marie. You can count on me. And Gouch's like, you better protect her, because I'll kick you in a little. It's like, so there's this thing, so it's like, oh, you can count on him. And he's like, I'll fucking kill you, Faith of Gouch.
This must be Infamous's favorite chapter. There was violence threatened against children this week. Actually, he must hate it because the children aren't being violently hurt this week.
They're protected, damn
it. Yeah, he's like, damn!
So Gouch does head back down the cave, and he's kind of grumbling to himself. Why is everyone like Asta so much? What's so great about that guy? Even the captain of the other brigade members think he's great. What the fuck? And that woman just caught him so easily. I bet that he and the hag just gave up. Come on. And then he arrives at the cave, and he sees that Asta, despite being, you know, pushed against a wall, is still standing up against Sally and the monster. And so everyone is exhausted and seemingly helpless, but they're still standing up against them and has to, you know, refuse to give up even if it kills him. And Gosher reacts to this by going, this guy's an idiot. But, you know, this, you know, indicates, you know, we've got, you know, Gosher's whole life philosophy, which is everyone is terrible in the world. I just have to care about Marie because everyone's going to screw us over. And Asta is basically proving him wrong over and over again the way he does with everybody else. So. I'm going to be happy when we get beyond these kinds of moments where we're introduced to all the Black Bulls and they all respect Asta, so we don't have to say, like, gee, Asta sure is great, isn't he?
Here's the thing, Nick. You know, like, a couple, like a couple months ago or something like that, I said something like, look, I'm just going to stop questioning how the mechanics of Bleach's world work, and I'm just going to accept it. I've come to that, like, 600 chapters early on Black Clover, where I'm like, look, I'm just going to stop questioning or getting annoyed when people were like, Asta's awesome. Because, I mean, there's literally, like, a fucking Brady Bunch, like, Asta, Asta, Asta! Why does everyone like him so much? I'm the best!
he does say Asta.
Yeah,
Asta.
He does! It's like, it's almost like we're reading him. I'm going to just, like, put that to the side and be like, that's just what this series is. And if you take that away, I still like a lot of what this chapter does. I think it's actually done a decent job of building up this idea, like, oh, Asta, for as talented as he is, for as broken as he is in this world, is still being challenged in this fight. This isn't something he can just slash his way right through the one magic enemy spell and immediately win. It's more complicated than that. His opponent is too strong for him. And even with help, there's the fact that there's the kids behind him. He can't kind of go all out. And I like this chapter because it also gives us some more context and some more character into Gosh. Like I said, he's one of the more interesting Black Bulls, so getting more of him has done a lot to kind of make me more interested in exactly where this story is going and where things are kind of headed. I feel like this was a very effective chapter of Black Clover and a great way to start off the year, which I will not be able to say the same for many other series this week.
Let's move on, speaking of which, to Bleach. Oh, God. 657, God of Thunder.
Two, yeah.
Last time, Yoruichi stepped in against Asuka Naklevar after we had moved mid-chapter away from Gerard, who, by the way, is one of the named characters in, like, the, you know, beginning of the chapter guide.
That Jump does, yeah.
In Jump. We've got Ichigo, Zubak, and Gerard. And I'm pretty sure that only Ichigo is actually in this chapter. I understand Zubak, you
know, and that's his unconscious body, right?
Right. You know, he's just... I don't even think we see his actual face. We just see, like, his unconscious
body. He's essentially as plot-relevant to this chapter as, like, that spire in the Soul King's palace is.
So, I understand maybe you want to be like, well, Zubak is actually the antagonist of the series, but Gerard's not in the chapter.
Well, it's amusing, too. Like, when they do that cover page with the character introductions, they always also take an image from the previous week and use that as the header, kind of. And they use Gerard, who, if you'll recall, is essentially in that shot last week for, like, one panel. So it's like they put that in again as, like, it's, you know, Gerard's craziness. Like, wasn't last chapter also all about Asuka Naklevar, though?
Yeah, it was. That was more just like him observing, oh, and this is where we transition to my fight.
Yeah. Or it wasn't even that. It was him explaining the whole Shrip shit. Where he was just like, they didn't give one to him. He is the heart. And it's like a cutaway shot to him, like, walking, like, ah!
I'm huge now!
So I do like that those are, like, the representations of this chapter. I think it's because maybe the team at Shonen Jump didn't also... We're like, who's this kid? Who's Yoruichi's brother?
Yushiro! So, last time Yoruichi unleashed her Raijin Senke, which we see again across three pages of this chapter, because Kubo is bound and determined to make every chapter of Bleach last for as little time as possible. So, rinse and repeat, like he always does. We do get this awesome... this pretty cool picture of Yoruichi as she's preparing to unleash the technique. She's got, like, lightning making her hair stand up and stuff. I think it's a cool effect.
I've heard people complain that her outfit's impractical, though, Nick. That it would never
Her outfits are always impractical!
I guess I don't understand how physics work, though, because I was like, no, it's like a collar around the neck. Like, that's how it stays up. And I guess I just don't comprehend the fact that it's, like, got no back whatsoever. It's, like, the wrap around the neck.
It was established when she first used Shunko that...
yeah, like, she can't have shit on the back. Like, that's where the spiritual energy is expended from. So, but yeah, practically, as an outfit, people are like, there's no way that'd stay up. And I'm like, wouldn't it? Am I this bad at physics?
Yeah, it would.
I don't know. I don't know the female.
People wear stuff that's clasped around the neck.
But would it
maybe she has? Maybe she has tape on it. But I mean, if she's aware that like I literally can't have any clothing on my back, so I'm just going to have a strap around my neck, she would then also make sure that it would actually stay on. Is what I'm saying.
Would she though? She walks around naked a lot when she was a cat lady.
Well, yeah, but she isn't a cat lady.
Right, she now can still turn into a cat lady, can't she?
I know.
Does she still have that power? Did that go away? Why doesn't she turn into a cat anymore, Nick?
Tekking 101, when he talked about this chapter, mentioned, by the way, that still hasn't been explained. It's been like 500 chapters. Anywho, so after Yoruichi is blown away asking Lakvar, she catches Orihime and is like, okay, heal yourself, and then heal Ichigo and Chad, and then go on ahead. I'll handle this guy. And then suddenly Yushiro shows up, and he tries to glomp Yoruichi. And there's literally just this, like, two-page sequence of him trying to hug her and express his brotherly love, and Yoruichi being like, no! Stop it! Well, I did that backwards. She does this thing where she actually bends... Her spine... Okay, look. I know she's a flexible ninja. Her spine bends in one spot when she, like, leans back to headbutt him.
It's like a perfect 90 degrees.
She's got, like, hinge right... She's got a hinge right there, is what I'm saying. So, I mean, you could bend over that far, but your entire back has to bend to do it. Whatever. So, she literally would rather headbutt her brother rather than let him give her a hug. Apparently she really doesn't like him. Maybe he's the reason that she left Soul Society.
It's the reason she turns into a cat and just walks away.
Big sister, where'd you go? There's just this cat here. Meow. So she's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, I decided to come here and help you because they've got all those captains and stuff. And she's like, oh, you'll help me, huh? I guess you're really strong now. He's like, yes! I'm so glad you noticed I'm stronger now! And Yoruichi's just like, alright, I forgot my little brother is so stupid he can't realize when someone's being sarcastic. What is with this kid? How did this kid become the head of the house? What, are his and Yoruichi's parents, is their entire family dead? And that's why he's the head of the household.
More than likely, I guess. Or, like, they're like, oh, we're so old. We'll give everything to our annoying son.
I think that there was something established about when Yoruichi became the head of the household way back when they established Soifon's backstory. So I guess if, like, she left and he was literally the only member of the family left, that would have to do it. But you would think that then you would get one of those, you know, evil vizier taking over the family or something like that because he's so easy to manipulate. Oh, God, this stupid kid. So, Asuka and Aklavar comes out of the spell because, of course, he's not dead. He's fine. Ichigo is like, I'll go on ahead, I guess. Be careful. And Yoruichi's like, whatever.
Oh, holy shit! I missed Ichigo waking up in this chapter!
He has lines!
It's such a small thing!
Ichigo, yeah, you tell her to be careful, considering that she's the only one in your group who didn't fall for the very obvious poison pit trap. Anyhow. So, Asuka and Akavar is like, you're both gonna be mad at me. And he says something, what does he say? He calls it a Raijin whatever thing, and Yushiro gets really pissed off. He's like, it's called Raijin Senkei! And if you're going to insult my sister, you'll have to deal with me! So Asuka Akavar takes out his bow, and he's like, oh, well, I mean, all right, you want to go, young lady? He's like, I'm a boy!
I love this, because then Asuka's like, you're not? oh, I'm sorry, about, and then she punches him in the face. She punches him, like, right in the fucking face. Like, it's like, well, what the fuck, dude? Like, not for nothing, you look feminine, and he apologized immediately. He made a simple mistake, and you just fucking clocked him in the mouth.
I mean, he didn't say something super sexist.
Yeah, like, he wasn't like,
women don't belong in the battlefield. Especially the one who nearly killed me just now.
Or even just, like, he's not even derogatory about it afterwards. Like, I'm not a girl that could have fooled me. Like, he's, like, legitimately like, oh, you're not? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I did not mean to offend you. I'm so sorry. My father's Italian. My mother. It's a Tumblr account. There's a lot of fights in our family. I understand completely. I did not want to offend you on this. And then she just fucking, or he just rather fucking punches her right in the mouth.
We should just call Yushira a girl from now on, if he's that sensitive about it, honestly.
I just call him Yorichi's little brother, because that's the only thing I qualify him as. I don't actually know who this kid is still.
Also, in Asuka Nakahara's defense, he's got a very offended face because of, like, the markings around his eyes. Not just the hairstyle, because all sorts of people have long hair in Bleach. But then when he's like, I'm not a girl, and he's blushing, looks super effeminate. Yeah. So, yeah.
You can understand why he's confused, and that's why I feel it's unjustified that he gets punched in the mouth afterwards.
So, Yushiro punches him a whole bunch, and Askenaklevar's like, oh god, you're so strong!
I fucking love Askenaklevar. There's just something about this guy, he's like, oh, my face! Oh god, why?! Like, he's crying, essentially. Please don't punch me in the face anymore.
So, Yushiro then says, of course I'm strong! I'm Yushiro Sakimuno Shihoin, the 23rd head of the Shihoin family! There is no way I would lose to some Quincy like you! Alright, I understand you're a bit offended that you were mistaken for a girl. That's racist. Okay, that's racist. So, grow up, kid, you know.
I think we've really seen who's the bigot in this situation here.
Yeah. We should shame him on Tumblr. Or
something. Yeah, we're going to create a Tumblr account that just shits all over him.
He unleashes Shunko, so, like, the external part of his outfit starts to disintegrate off. And, of course, because Kubo am good art drawer writer, we don't actually see what he looks like without it on. For the entire rest of the chapter, it's just shots of him from the neck up. That's, like, I know why it disintegrates off, because he uses Shunko, so, you know, that's the stuff that's on his back, and so that's going to disintegrate off.
He didn't have just, like, room for another full-page spread, Nick. He used four at the beginning, showing Yorichi's attack from last chapter.
And he had to use this entire full-page spread of an explosion that isn't really all that impressive-looking. So, Yorichi uses some sort of thunder, Shunko and Yushiro apparently uses explosion / fire. So, we do get a nice shot of Asuka Nakahara just, like, completely covered in flames, like, he's scorched by in the middle of it. And, Yorichi's like, why'd you do that? You know, what would have happened if I hadn't weakened him first and so on? But then she's like, although I guess I should commend you for mastering Shunko that I just taught you. And Yushiro's like, oh, yay! When did she teach him? How long ago was this? Has she visited Soul Society recently?
That was just taught him. Is this like a character who even existed before, like, the past, like, year and a half of publication?
Well, I'm just confused because I don't know where Yorichi's been. As far as I know, she's just been in Karakura Town since the end of the Soul Society arc, and Yushiro's been in Soul Society, so the last time she would have been around before that would have been 100 years ago when she, you know, left in order to help Urahara. So, is...
Maybe taught it to him in the teleportation ride over.
So, maybe she taught it to him at some point in one of the time skips we've had. And, in which case, that means that someone from Karakura Town has been going to Soul Society, you know, at some point. I don't know. The timeline is confused for me. Because this is the first time I've heard that Yorichi was ever in Soul Society. I'm just pointing it out. Anyhow, Asuka Nakahara is still alive. And he's like, hey, didn't you listen? I said I can control the fatal dose of a substance I designate by ingesting a large amount of it. So you just pumped me full of your spirit energy, and so now you can't kill me with it.
He's like, and I went through the kindness of announcing my abilities powers to nobody in general. And you still didn't get it. I could have internally thought that. I still announced it on the off chance you heard about it. You did hear about it. And you still didn't take that into account. Put form on you, Yorichi's brother.
I do like this final bit where he's just like, well, now that you've used your ultimate technique, you aren't going to be able to hurt me, so fuck you. No. Maybe this means Yorichi will actually use her Zanpakuto if she has one. I think she has one. She was the captain of the second division at some point, so she probably has one.
Yeah. Presumably.
I don't know. Nanao managed to get the vice captain without us. Without
she's really going to Kido, so. Nick. But she still had one. Turns out she still had one. So, she should, right?
I don't know. Soy Fun has a Zanpakuto, so I'm guessing that Yorichi has one. Alright. So that's Bleach.
Great chapter. Best chapter. Best chapter 2016 of Bleach.
Yes, so
there
far.
You go. Boosh.
Add on all of them qualifiers, and there we go.
We'll move on then to what I believe is the best chapter of Fairy Tale of 2016 that I've read. There might have been three
stiff
more.
Stiff competition!
There might have been three more released since we've started this podcast. I don't know.
You Hero, never know with Hero.
Hero is a crazy work ethic. Chapter 467, Mother's Key, which has a cover page of Wendy Sherry? I think, and Carla, and
Sherry, yeah, or something like that.
Some bullshit version of Sherry, essentially. And there's a, I'm just gonna skip over. There's too much to fucking bitch about in the rest of this chapter. The focus on the cover page, almost having a panty shop at the fucking cat girl.
Honestly, I like the idea of this chapter, but it's really rushed.
Okay, so we start off focusing on the side guilds who are trying to defend against the Spriggan 12, particularly Limia Skell and Mermaid Heel. And we see Leon making, like, his giant Titan's feed, and essentially a whole bunch of that giant cast. We cut away to Wall, who's, like, miles and miles away, and he, like, uses his, like, super robot vision to, like, pinpoint a bunch of people, like, a bunch of mages, and just summons missiles out of nowhere to just fire at them. And just,
Wall is one of my favorite characters in this series now.
Just blows the shit out of them. You're like, holy
so
shit.
So awesome.
This guy's great. I don't want him to die. You know how Fairy Tale almost always, like, at the end of an arc, one of the villains, like, redeams himself and hangs around and just be... I want to be Wall. I know no, it's going to be...
Can you imagine, like, it's like, yeah, he just shows up occasionally as the side character who just summons missiles to hell. And he's like, for Fairy Tale, just blows up.
Friendship! It's like fucking, it's like a Zord firing off missiles. It just goes friendship beforehand. Bunch of missiles fly out. However, the one that was going to hit Beth is blocked by Kaguya. Or not Kaguya. What is her name? No, Kagura. That's Kage. Similar. Kagura.
Kagura, right. Yeah.
Kagura. Basically the Urza rival from the Fighting Festival, the Magic Game arc. And she kind of slashes the missile in half.
Less bullshit Urza, yes. Basically.
She slashes the missile in half, but
which
then,
works with warheads. Totally works.
Magic warheads, Nick, obviously. When the character... Oh, and we learned her name last week, and I've still forgotten it. I'm going to call her Sword Lady.
Okay.
Sword Lady shows up, and she's like, ooh, I like your reaction time. And that Eastern kimono of yours is so pretty. Well, I like the qualifier of Eastern kimono, I guess implying that there is an Eastern... I mean, east of Ishgal would be the Empire. It's the only other continent. So I guess those clothes are from the continent, then? The Empire? I feel like it was... I feel like it was, like, Hero... And this might just be the translation, but I feel like Hero, if that's, like, direct, would be like, yeah, it's from the Eastern areas, like, thinking Japan's still in the fairy tale world somewhere.
Or maybe some term that with, like, an equivalent to that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or maybe like they establish the world.
No. Maybe he said something that would, you know, because, you know, like Asian, Oriental, Eastern, a lot of those terms could be put there, so.
Yeah. But Sword Lady's like, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to stain it crimson. And everyone's paralyzed with fear because she's so strong. And Sword Lady's like, your bangs remind me of Randy's. I'm going to enjoy toying with you. And Kaguya, Kagura's shirt explodes off because I wouldn't.
Okay. Until that point, that's a really cool scene where she's like, oh, you're so cool, and that's a really nice kimono. It's too bad I'm going to have to ruin it with your blood. But then she ruins it by cutting it off of her. without actually cutting her and thus staining it with blood.
Yeah, it's going to...
Because
it's ruined.
Fan service, because fairy tale.
It's ruined forever, but not with blood. That's not... That did, played no part in it being damaged.
Right. Speaking of Brandish...
We cut away to Brandish waking
remember,
up.
Remember, last chapter ended with her being strangled and her face being like...
Yeah. It was about as graphic as a strangling as you could possibly imagine. So we pick up this time with all that resolved. Like, Brandish yes. wakes up in the infirmary, and Lucy and Kana basically explain, yeah, we found Marin trying to choke you to death, and we stopped him from doing that, and then we brought you here to heal you up. We kept your shackles on, you know, because we can't trust you, but we tried to make things more comfortable. And Brandish is like, oh, you know, you saved me? Why'd you do that? And like, well, you know, because we have a lot of info we still need to get out of you. And they make some joke about, like, I won't tell you anything. Even if you do plan to torture me. And Lucy's like, I'm not going to torture you. And then kind of, like, interjects.
I was like, God damn it, Lucy!
Unless you want me to torture you? But Lucy comes in with what is considered one of the best lines of the year already, where she says, I shared a bath with you. You don't seem like an evil person to me. Which, in the context of the scene she's referring to, could make sense. You know, through that conversation they had, they did get some glimpse of the idea that Brandish isn't an awful person. That she has at least some measure of leeway that the other Spring and 12 definitely do not. That she didn't indicate that she's someone who enjoys destruction or murder or killing. We could have gone with that and saying, I shared that conversation with you, right. and when I know you're not a bad person.
When we are in the bath together, I could feel in my heart that you're not a bad person.
When she says, I shared a bath with you, you're like, no, you didn't.
We were naked and wet next to each other. Therefore, you're
you
not...
You forced me to take a bath with you. That was not my choice. My bath-taking rights were taken from me.
And you made me wear cat ears for some reason. I think that you
and a bell, if I recall. But basically, Brandish is like, look, well, let's talk about your mother. Everyone else needs to leave the room, though, first. And, they leave the room. The shackles, I don't actually... Oh, sorry, they take the restraints off, but the cuffs stay on. So she can move her arms. I don't know why they allow this. Do they actually give a reason why?
No.
Doesn't seem like they do. It's just, they're like, look, we'll keep the magic restraining cuffs on you so you can't...
I think
Brandish
asks for the handcuffs to be removed.
First, take these off. It's oh, okay. First, take these off. All right. Fair enough. It's still like
okay,
a weird
we'll
thing.
We'll let you
they...
move your arms, but you're not going to be able to use your magic still. So,
Brandish reveals that her name is Brandish
Sigma.
Symbol Thing. Symbol do symbol dongle. Brandish symbol dongle.
It's not Sigma. It's what is it? I'll look up the Greek alphabet. Go
okay. Ahead. Very good. And she talks about her mother, how her mother was one of the servants of Layla, Lucy's mother. And now Lucy was a, or sorry, not Lucy, Layla was a celestial spirit wizard, and when she retired, she gave her keys to three of her servants.
Moo.
Capricorn. What's that?
Moo.
Moo?
Moo.
Moo, like a cow?
Yes.
Moo. I am Brandish Moo. Doesn't seem like a very endearing name.
I think it might be Mew.
Brandish Mew?
It's spelled M-U, but I'm not... I think that it's either Mew or Moo.
Maybe this person's calling to give us an answer. That's my hope. We reveal that the keys were given to these people and that the key of Capricorn, which was the key that Lucy got from her mother, was actually given to Grammy, a.k.a. Brandish's mother. And that kind of poses an interesting scenario. Well, how, if that key was given to Grammy, did her mother then give it to Lucy? And then Brandish essentially poses that question. Like, how do you think you got it? You know, well, you got the key from your mom. How did she give it back to you if she gave it to Grammy? And Brandish reveals that Layla came to steal the key back, and she murdered my mother to get it. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's a big reveal. We've not had much of a suggestion to this point. Well, we had a little bit, actually, because we know that she had some reaction with Zaref. But this is, like, the big, I guess, like, twist. Like, oh, Lucy, your mom, maybe not a completely kosher person. Maybe there's something off about that. Brandish basically just shits on her, like, you're naive, you only believe in the world that you see. And she whooshes out of bed, literally, whooshes out of bed, and basically puts Lucy in, like, a rear naked choke variant, essentially, where she's hand gagged her as well as basically choking her out. Actually, I'm not sure where the actual strangulation is, because one hand is holding Lucy's hands behind her back and the other one's covering her mouth. So nothing in that should actually be asphyxiating her, unless her legs wrapped around Lucy's hips is supposed to do something. Either way, she's being strangled.
What were you talking about?
Somehow, I stopped to comprehend exactly how Brandish is choking Lucy to death with one hand is around her mouth and the other one is holding her hands behind her back. Nothing's around Lucy's throat at that moment, but she's still strangling her.
Well, you can suffocate someone if you just cover the nose and mouth.
Yeah, but that's not going to immediately pass you out.
No.
And she's not pinching her nose either.
She's covering it, though. She's clasping.
Yeah, but that's going to knock you out. I'm not going to suffocate you to death.
I mean, she's going
to... Eventually it'll kill you, but that's like...
Yeah. It'll be much longer than if she actually just, grabbed around the neck, but...
I guess it works in its own way. I guess the notion is like, look, even though she was strong enough to get the jump on Lucy, she couldn't take the chance of Lucy overpowering her? I don't know. But Brandish is crying and says, I'm sorry, but the only way for me to avenge my mother is to take your life. We start seeing water drip, and the first time I saw this, I was really horrified that this was some urine joke. Or, not joke, but, like, sexual thing. Like, she was, peeing herself. Because I watched enough episodes of...
You didn't see the boss that had been knocked over next to them.
Yeah. I watched, I think, like, 2 or 3 episodes of Ikitosin where that happened, and I was like, oh, no one else could do this!
You watched Ikitosin.
I was 13, and there was very limited anime selection on Comcast On Demand, alright? I'll have you know.
You could have just stopped it. I was 13.
The vase knocks over, and I stopped after that, though, just so people judging me in the chat room could stop. The vase knocks over, and who should appear to come and save Lucy... But Aquarius herself, who's like, what were you saying about my key? And Lucy just finishes a chapter being like, oh, Aquarius. And that's where we end.
Okay. I like this sequence of events in theory, but it's heroed up. It's like 3/4 of a chapter when it really should be 2.5, 3 chapters long. This could actually be really good if it were actually drawn out and given proper dramatic weight. Because we learn so much in this chapter about Brandish, and it's pretty heavy stuff. You know, it's like, my mother, worked for your mother, and she loved her, but then she was betrayed because your mother wanted Aquarius's key, which had been entrusted to her. And so now the only way I can have closure is if I kill you in revenge. And then Aquarius shows up and is going to somehow resolve the whole thing.
I turned it off.
Okay, thanks. Who is that?
Thanks.
Stop screaming.
So, can you imagine, like, if we had a little bit more of the flashback sequence where Branch is recalling times with her mother and, like, it ends on the notes of, and then your mother killed her. And that's the end of one chapter. And then the next chapter either ends with Branch trying to kill her, or the ends with her trying to kill her, and then it ends like this chapter does. Just spread out a little bit more and give some proper impact to your mother killed my mother. And let us take that and actually have some investment for when Aquarius shows up to save the day. That's all you really need, is just to give it a little bit more space. It's so rushed that you don't have any time to process, holy shit, that's why Brandish had an interest in Lucy, that's why she wanted to find out about her. And you can see, like, the conflict, because she kind of likes Lucy from how they've gotten to know each other, and, she wants to get revenge for her mother. And then Aquarius shows up, and, okay, it's too much all at once. It really is. So I'm disappointed, because it's like, God damn it, here, you had another cool idea, and then you fucked it up again.
I could enjoy parts of it, but as you said, there's a lot of heroisms. And I also, I know, I'm not surprised Aquarius is still around. Like, it's not like she died, her key was broken. Like, the spirit was still always out there.
Right.
It's just one of those things where after, like, when she came back, my only thought isn't like, holy crap, Aquarius is back. My thought's just like, well, how and why? Like,
right.
There's no tease or explanation in this chapter for how Aquarius got back. Does she just have one of those, like, sixth senses? Like, someone's talking shit about me. I better show up and bring some fucking business to this.
The next chapter opens up with her. It's like, Aquarius, you came to save me. Shut up.
Like, Aquarius, how did you get here?
I was talking shit.
I was hiding in every vase, don't you know?
You just had to spill so much on the floor and I would have returned.
I've always been there. I've been with you in every vase you've had in your house for the past 2 years. It's just one of those things, like, I wish we had a little explanation of that. But otherwise, it could be okay. But there definitely are some hang-ups to this chapter that caused me some issues. But so be it. We should move along, though, I believe, to
Food Wars. Shokugeki no Soma, chapter 149, which is, where is the title of this? Heaven and Hell! It's actually not a very, you know, like...
18 pages of heaven and the shot of hell.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, there's a little bit of, you know, drama. But for the most part, it's just like, ha ha ha, you know, pleasant
party,
life.
Party!
Victory party. But, you know, whenever I think of heaven and hell, or heaven or hell, I just think of fighting games, you know? It's like,
Guilty Gear.
Yeah, there's no conflict, you know, in this chapter until the very end. So
heaven or hell, let's rock!
Heaven and hell could have, you know, been used for a much more impactful and eventful chapter, basically.
I think my biggest concern about that page is they have this, like, excessively, like, exquisite and lavish dinner and a bottle of Coke to drink it with. I'm like, is there no, like, soda or drink specialist in this school or in this crappy dorm anywhere? They were just like, yes, we shall make finely cut strips of the finest sirloin, soaked it in a Parmesan brulee, and then sprinkle it over some deep-fried tempura, and of course serve it with this bottle of Coke I picked up at the 7-Eleven on my way here.
It's like one guy whose entire specialty is opening cans of soda in fancy ways.
Yeah, he's just like, don't you know the carbonation process? I am the wizard of carbonation! And every shot's like a thing, a bottle of Coke positioned over his dick, firing off into the air. Like, oh, okay, I see why this dude's in here.
I mean, there are lots of good things you can cook that involve using soda.
Mm.
But, you know, Coca-Cola chicken, that's just delicious.
You're at it.
It is delicious. But, yeah, it's just like, there's just a bottle of soda there. It's like, oh yes, to accompany this dish, the finest Coca-Cola 2015.
I like to think everyone at the table is, like, turning to, I don't know, it's probably like, who's the fucking short pig-haired girl?
Oh, yeah, she's got a very plain name.
Yana, Hana, something like that. Anyway, they all turn to her, and they're like, fucking pigtails, you were in charge of bringing sodas to, like, drinks to this. And she's like, I forgot! I picked up Coke on the way here! Like, Aaron is like, $40,000! That's how much I spent on caviar for this bullshit party that you brought Sam's Choice Cola to! Not even Coke!
It's Yoshino, by the way.
Yoshino? There we go. Yoshino, everyone hates her.
Anyhow.
This is a real bitch to potlucks.
So, the Aldinis arrive, and Takumi is like, Yugihira, I watched your Shokugeki on this TV, and everyone's like, oh, he's in lecture mode! Because, you know, character quirk jokes. You know, I don't know. I've never really liked that about some manga where they, like, observe some weird characteristic that someone has, and then whenever they go into it, they point it out. It's like, I know what the joke is, you know?
I might not mind it if it seemed to make more sense, but I don't...
Yeah.
Like, when he does it, it never seems like it's... I guess he doesn't technically do it this time, so maybe that's why.
No, they're like, surprised. It's like, oh, he's gonna lecture Soma and stuff. I mean, his whole interaction with Soma is the fact that he is a much more proper and refined chef but is also on roughly Soma's level. So Soma's, you know, kind of the rough and uncaring guy. He's like, oh, this is the proper way you do things. I can't believe you're doing that, and blah, 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 blah. And so that's just how he interacts with Soma all the time. Despite the
fuck you, Aldini!
And it just goes like, puffs on his throat, fuck off!
I'm the soda guy at the party, I'm like, fuck you, Aldini, get out of here!
Hey, fuck you!
Put up the banner outside that says Italians go home, and he's just like, oh! Oh!
What you gonna do with this ball?
Oh, let's get out of here, the twin brother! Whoop, whoop, whoop! They jump out like Super Mario Brother characters. They transport themselves home down a green pipe.
Boom, boom, boom.
And I'm like, ah, yeah, don't you get out of here.
But Takumi instead says, you know, if my home was threatened in the same way, if I had been in the same situation, I would have done what you did. So I was like, oh, okay. But anyhow, someone's like, let's celebrate! Yeah, we've got shrimp, and we've got eggs, and we've got burritos? Whatever the fuck those wraps are.
Maybe like, what do you call them? Not, I want to call them chinchillos, and that's an animal, I'm pretty sure.
Chimichangas?
No, chimichangas? Is that it?
That's one of the Mexican dishes.
It might be that. Although I think chimichanga is usually covered in a sauce, so it's probably not. Yeah. Maybe it is something different. It might be something Japanese, I don't know.
So we get like the tail end of Soma's explanation for what he was doing, and he actually says, you know, I just figured as long as I could actually get them to taste my cooking, then everything would be fine. Kind of improvised a whole bunch, though. So, I mean, you know, but that makes sense, you know, because he's almost got to go, them not having to taste the dish. So everyone is freaking out. It's like, oh man, I can't believe this. You know, I can't believe that Yukihira is actually on their level. And some guy is like, does this mean that he could beat Nakiri? And she's like, excuse me? And who are you calling Nakiri-chan? So, you know, they talk about a whole bunch of stuff. Soma says that he wants to actually challenge Ace onto a real Shokugeki where they're both even, because, you know, he didn't actually start playing until halfway through the Shokugeki, which I'm glad that he brings that up, because, you know, it was something that we brought up in the conclusion to their match, which was Aizan obviously hadn't actually properly prepared for this, so Soma had the advantage in that respect. But, I'm glad that it's like, we'll get potentially more Aizan Shokugekis.
Nick's hope secretly just praying everyone votes for that one of the Aizan Soma chapters.
Do an Aizan chapter! Damn it! So,
but you were Aizan and Soma last time. You'd be doing it.
Just do the whole chapter myself, yeah.
I'll just be the judge every so often.
You don't even read his lines. You just gotta, like, see there's a word bubble go. Ishiki arrives in mid conversation, basically. And he's like, oh, you know, there's a good chance that we'll actually be able to defend the dorm now. We're not actually out of the woods yet, though. And so they're like, oh, where have you been? And Ishiki says, well, I'm sorry. I wasn't in a position where I could actually do anything because I'm actually an official, you know, member of the council still. So, I mean, if I had actually tried to use my authority to, you know, help the dorm, then that would have just brought down even more pressure on us. So I had to let you guys handle it instead. And so I was like, oh, okay. And some people were like, oh, that's good. I was kind of starting to wonder if he had sold us out. And he's like, what? No! I would never do that! How could you think that, you guys?
Stupid meanies!
And Ishiki says that because of the results of the Shokugeki, Central has announced a new policy, which the Izami administration will accept any and all Shokugeki challenges in relation to the order to disband all societies and seminars, and it's guaranteed that the Shokugeki will be conducted fairly and with impartial judges. So I'm imagining like meat skewer guys just like, oh, thanks! He points out, of course, that you know we're still under the control of the Izami administration, so anyone who actually fails the Shokugeki means that they'll actually, you know, be kicked out. They will have to deal with the consequences, but this means that there, you know, is some hope for people, and that's all because of Soma. You brought the Shokugeki system back to life. And he thanks Soma. He actually says, you saved our home. Oh, that's nice. Whatever his name is, Bangs Dude, whose name I still haven't bothered to memorize. Wait, I actually opened up that character page just for examples of the Ibusaki! Okay. One day he'll do something important. I'll have to remember his name.
He's the smoking guy.
Yeah, he is.
That's his thing.
So they're like, oh yeah, you know, I'm glad that, you know, you didn't sell us out. And Ishiki says, oh, I heard that you guys had to, you know, defend the gang of enforcers and stuff. And everyone speaks up and they're like, well, you know, we couldn't let him do all the fighting by himself. And everyone's like, oh, you're such a good guy. Ishiki's like, oh, shut up.
Oh, thanks.
I can't see my eyes. Ishiki celebrates by, of course, doing his naked apron thing, which it's been a while since they did that in the series, I think. And I like how Hisako is just like, what the hell? And everyone's like, oh! Immediately, oh, the LDs are just like, ah, well, yeah, every time I see him, that happens, yeah.
We're all cool with this now.
Yeah, we just, you know, are just, you know, used to this now. And so we get this moment where Hisako and Eren are kind of off in the corner while the party's going on. And Hisako's like, I thought the Aldinis were normal, but they're actually okay with that weird nude display. What the fuck? But Eren is distracted and she's thinking to herself, you know, it's like the people here are kind of weird. Hey, Hisako, do you know how to use a washing machine? And she's like, yes. Oh, that's amazing. That's always the washing machine. You ever notice that? Rich people don't know how to use washing machines. That is, like, always the example when a rich person leaves their, like, super mansion and they don't have people to do all their stuff for them, is the washing machine.
Nick, I've you know, lived on my own for, what, like, 7-8 years now, and I've did my laundry before, and I still get confused on the washing machine sometimes. I'm like, am I supposed to turn it to 6 or 18? What do these numbers mean? They mean nothing to me. I've been told to use one, and it's the one I've used my entire life, despite the fact I've been using different washing machines. I don't know if this is the same, if it's like a metric that's standard through washing machines. I'm just always 12. It's who knows how long that is.
So, yeah, basically she's just like, my point is that there are strange things in this world and there are a whole bunch of them in this dormitory, and Yukihira is at the center of them all. And she has a flashback to when the dorm was under attack, and she was observing everyone fighting against them, and basically she was thinking, you know, on every one of their faces I saw the hope, no, the expectation that Yukihira would work a miracle. And she even mentions to Hisako, you know what, it looked like you kind of knew when I saw you that you knew he would win, so what made you think that? And Hisako just says, I just kind of had a feeling that maybe if there is someone who can save the Institute from Azami, it's him. And what disrupts this moment but Ishiki's super clenched ass?
It is the finest ass that has ever been drawn in Shonen Jump, and that is coming from a series that a magazine that had cross manage in it at one point right in time.
And I have a problem with this because his ass jiggles.
We see it looks like it's 90% muscle, too. I don't know what's
jiggling.
There is
no way that thing jiggles. If you, like, tried to toss about the quarter off of that, it would, like, hold on to the quarter and clench it in its musculature.
It's the kind of ass you could bounce a nickel off of.
So, yeah, that disrupts that moment, and time just kind of passes into the night.
What I love is that that happens. That scene happens. He shows up, his butt, Hirako like, oh my god, put some clothes on! And the entire time, Erin is just sitting there, and her eyes have clearly descended into that place of just abject depression and horror, where she's like, Azami's going to destroy everything in this school and everything that I love.
So yeah, it's like now that she's been reminded, oh yeah, my dad controls the school, and I'm under his thumb.
I just love the idea that she's in this place, and in the foreground is this wacky half-naked comedy sketch, like, whoa, look at my butts everywhere!
He's dancing around, the apron is getting dangerously high with every swing.
And, like, right in front of her face, like, her nose inches away from it, and she's just lost in this drowning depression.
Suddenly the doorbell rings. Soma goes to answer the door. And holy fuck, this page is so great. It's just a full page spread of just Azami just kind
of... I heard you guys had soda pop here. That's what you did?
And so yeah, he's there. And that's the end of the chapter. It's just him showing up at the door.
So there's the hell.
Yeah. It's a creepy fucking picture. It's really good.
If this series ends, I feel like the artist needs to get into working a horror manga.
It's just with the zombie as the star.
Yeah, or someone who looks exactly like him and just kills people instead of making food. He actually might do both in this series. I don't know yet. But yeah.
He teams up with the author of Neuro.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's a terrifying combination.
So, yeah. You know, more of the aftermath of the whole Aizen Shokugeki establishes a little bit, but for the most part, jokey-jokey, up until, oh, the zombie's back. It's just gonna get real next time, I'm sure. So, but it was an alright chapter. Nothing too much to write home about, except for that one picture, I think, of a zombie just looking creepy as fuck. So, now let's move on to My Hero Academia.
Now, cover page, one of those classic cover color pages where they do it like it's a comic cover. Mm-hmm. Nick, we get our first full color shot of the Pussycats.
Mm-hmm.
Who is your waifu? You have to pick one. Immediately, right now.
Tiger.
Oh, damn it, you took mine! Fuck, I guess I'll go with the blonde then. God damn it, I wanted Tiger! You're like the guy who steals the Riddle in Monopoly! Or picks Oddjob first at 007. Fuck you!
Wait, which one? What did you say about Monopoly?
The limo in Monopoly, the best piece.
There's no limo, there is a car, but...
No, there's a limo on Monopoly. Well, it's a limo, essentially.
It's a fancy old style car.
It's an old wacky car. I call it a limo. Yeah. We called it a limo in my house, Nick, because we were poor, and that's what I thought a limo was until I was 27. Just right now I realize it's not a limo. I was like, oh my god. I've been under the idea that that was richness and extravagance personified.
The piece I always pick is the ship. So
the battleship. I can dig it. Top hat's pretty clutch too. Don't be the thimble though. Thimble's lame. I'm like, how's a thimble going to carry money? It's just going to fall out of the holes. This is ridiculous.
I would probably also use the cat now that they've added that one.
I can't trust a cat with money. I've had a cat. They're dicks. They're going to lose it.
But if you are the cat...
Well, if I'm the cat, then I'm playing a different kind of Monopoly game, because I'm just buying shit to antagonize people then. Which, ironically, is not too different from my regular Monopoly strategy.
You're like, oh, you want that?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, the game's not going my way. Oh, it's falling off the table.
You like just kind of like, get up on the board.
Yeah, just sit under my butt like, you have to play around me.
You get on top of someone's Monopoly and just lie there. Sweep your imaginary tail across the houses.
That's what I should have done at MAGFest when we played Rue, Clan of the Grey Wolf, and he started laying on a boardwalk like three times, like, fuck this! I'm a cat meow!
I wish I'd been around for that.
Fuck him.
Alright. Anyhow, number 73, Good Evening. Or, I think that's not even it. I think it's something like... No, it is Good Evening, I guess. Because I don't think they bring up the chapter title there. Anyhow, last time we found out that the new members of the Villain Alliance were going to be attacking the training camp. We catch up with some of them. They're just kind of like, you know, discussing amongst themselves, you know, what they're going to do. Some of them were like, oh, I don't know about this. It's not cute. And one of them was like, oh, my blood's pumping. I can't wait. And the weird scarred guy, whose name I haven't memorized yet, seems to kind of be the de facto leader, because he's, you know, telling them, you know, keep it together, you know, don't go in yet, we've got to wait for everyone to arrive. And he mentions that there are going to be 10 people in their group, which is...
Oh my god! You're right, Ginger Straw Hat! She is Bane! She's got the mask and everything, like, I mean, this is no good! Not cute at all!
There's gotta be some sound reasoning behind all this.
I'm not asking about any of that. I'm just saying it's not cute, Batman.
I was born in stained fangirlism, molded by it. You very adopted it.
So we've got some more people who show up alongside the original four that we saw. We've got this guy with big old lips and sunglasses. There's this guy who's got scales everywhere, and he doesn't seem to actually have a mouth. He looks somewhat reminiscent of the of Stain, though, because he's got the mask that goes across his eyes, and he doesn't seem to have much of a nose. And then there's a guy in just bondage gear who's got straps going into his mouth.
Oh, it's like going, like Anima from Final Fantasy X. For the people who play Final Fantasy X, you know that reference. They're like, Chris nailed it. He got it. What a great clutch reference, Chris.
He's just going, job. Man, job, man.
He also sounds like pain. A drop! A drop! Even. He's a musical pain. A drop! A drop!
Alright. So yeah. We cut over to the training camp. Just like this nice shot of like all the students sleeping. And I seriously love the two pictures we get. We've got one shot of the guys. And like none of them are actually fully in their sleeping bag.
Their beds have like... Or they're overlapped.
I think they're called tatami mats. I think none of them are fully on their sleeping area, except for Mineta, who of course is tied into his, so he can't get away. And none of them are using their pillows, except for one person who has all the pillows burying his head.
And then juxtapose that with the ladies' side, where all of them, like, except for the assassin or the acid girl, who's like kind of flopped out. All the rest of them are like neatly tucked into their beds. I'm like,
except the invisible girl, because we have to determine that she again has nothing covering her.
Yeah, assumingly she sleeps naked and without the covers on.
Does this girl have any body temperature? Seriously,
I like the juxtaposition there, though. I'm just like, was that a thing? Like, it was like, when I was a young boy, did I, like, just flop all over the bed? And I'm like, yeah, I guess so. Maybe is this perhaps the realest boy, girl, or male and female joke that's ever been made in manga? Because this really hits home.
I think that I sleep much more tidily than I did when I was younger.
I definitely feel like I do now, but I'm like, yeah, I guess boys are just obnoxious, uncomfortable assholes in bed.
That's why no one wanted to actually share beds on school trips. It had nothing to do with, like, ooh, it's good. It's just like, no, I've got to have my own space or else I'm going to roll around and I'm going to punch you at some point.
Oh, I was 100% not being gay when I was a kid. Which is such a douchey thought. Like, I'm like, nowadays, I'm like, I'll just sleep on top of the covers. Fuck you. But as a kid, it was like, no, we can't be... Catholic school, Nick. Remember that. I'm like, we can't both be in the same bed. Jesus will judge us. He's going to be mad. And the school's like, no, we're Christian, we're cheap too, you sleep, you double bunk.
We can't afford another mattress and blanket and pillow.
Yeah, you can sleep on the couch, I don't give a fuck, but you're in this room, we're not giving you your own bed.
We're not giving you any spare blankets or pillows, fuck off. okay. And also there's the note of, like, Aizawa, one of the other teachers, are actually still planning their teaching regimen, it looks like. I guess that's Tiger. Without any of the,
No, it's the teacher from Class B.
Oh, from Class... Okay. Yeah, you're right, yeah. I also didn't recognize him without his costume.
I mean, I don't know if he was a character... I think he was introduced last chapter and has a pretty, like, unspectacular, like, unremarkable design, so I'm not surprised.
He seems very kind of drill sergeant-y, but not... It's not over-the-top enough to be really memorable. Anyhow, we progress to the third day, and, Aizawa is ragging on the remedial group, they're like, we're sorry, we're just really tired because of the extra lessons, and Aizawa's like, well, I told you that this would be rough, and it turns out that they lose 4 hours of sleep time in order to take their remedial lessons. Well, that sucks.
That's brutal. So brutal.
So he goes over, their different quirks. He's like, Sato and Kaminari, you guys have, limits that you need to surpass, you need to increase your capacities. Sero, you need to extend your capacity, but also strengthen your tape and increase your firing speed. Ashito, you need to improve your skin's resistance against your own acid. And Kirishima, you need to build up your muscles and make your body even harder. But he's also like, you all have to make up for your piss-poor performances as well, though. And then he also points out, hey, Uraraka, Aoyama, you guys didn't fail, but you were very close to failing. You needed 30 points to pass, and you got 35. Because remember, Uraraka basically managed to slap the handcuffs on, what was his name? Black Hole Guy, just by pure luck. So they really, yeah.
She got embarrassed, let go, and because he wouldn't kill her, she got an advantage and got the win.
Right. It's almost kind of surprising that Aoyama didn't have to take remedial lessons because he didn't do very much. But I guess he did enough that he, you know, was.
I guess he was conscious during it. I think that was the thing that worked against Saros. He was literally had to be carried across the finish line.
Right. So Aizawa says, you know, always be conscious of who you are. That's the key to improvement. And that's why you're out here sweating, why I'm riding you so hard. Keep it in mind always. But the other students also hear this and take the advice. The advice kind of hits home. And so, yeah. Deku basically asks, oh, you know, this is the third day, so are the other teachers going to actually come? And Aizawa says, well, no. In order to make sure that we wouldn't be able to be tracked, we have fewer, you know, teachers here, and that's why the Pussycats are here to help out. So, okay. Also, All Might can't be here because he stands out a lot. What, the guy in the red, white, and blue bodysuit with hair that looks like this stands out? What are you talking about? One of the Pussycats, I don't remember which one. It's the blonde one.
My waifu? How dare you, Nick?
You don't remember her name either.
Waifu. She's honey to me. We don't go by names.
So, she says, okay, you know, the two classes that are here are going to have a test of courage as a reward for your intense training. So, you know, we're going to do the carrot and stick approach, you know. So work your butts off in the meantime, then, you know, you get to have fun at night. And, but Deku was still thinking about Aizawa's advice. We cut ahead to, I guess, lunchtime. Everyone's preparing food. There's a quick moment where Uraraka's like, wow, you're actually really good with a kitchen knife. And Bakugo's like, well, why would I be doing with a knife? He just starts, like, he's just like calmly talking, and then he's just like, what are you talking about?
Fuck you, sir.
Like, you can't say anything to this guy without him getting pissed off. God. Todoroki mentions to Deku, like, you know, what did you want to know about All Might 4? And Deku, I guess, what's the point of really says? You know, I was thinking also about Coda, because, you know, he's got this thing against people with quirks and, you know, the superpower society, so I haven't been around anyone like that before, but I'm sure that All Might could find the words to talk to him about. And we get this great moment where Deku's like, what do you think you would tell him? And Todoroki has this big dramatic close-up, and he's just like, well, it depends. That's it. That's his big, dramatic, important line. Just, it depends.
What a situation.
Yeah. So he goes on this, you know, long analysis. Like, you know, I don't know his background, but, you know, maybe a righteous speech from a stranger would just be annoying. You know, words alone would have to be really meaningful to move someone. But what actually matters is what the person saying it has done, what they're doing in life. You got to back up words with actions, I think. So yeah, he says this long thing where he's like saying really dramatic stuff, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't really know." So Deku thinks about that for a bit, and so he's like, "Okay, thanks for the advice." Essentially, and then they're like, "All right, now it's time for the test of courage." And Ashiwa's like, "Yeah," and Aizawa says, "Well, actually, remedial group, you know, you've got to have your extra lessons with me now." And there's this wonderful panel of Ashiwa reacting to this. I have no idea what the hell this art style is, but it's, like, very, you know, line-heavy, and you're just going, no! And he has to drag all five of them away with his bandages. Actually, oh, there is a fifth one there. It was really hard to make out Kirishima, because you just see his hair.
Yeah, pop it out.
So they're like, no, we want to do the test of courage, but honestly, it doesn't seem like they're missing very much. Because literally, like, they're going to take turns going down this trail where one class is going to be set up as the scariest and one group is going to be divided into pairs walking through it. And they're going to just see how many people they can scare, and the class that gets the most successful scares wins. That's it.
It's
just like,
remember, okay. This is also, it's a training camp, but it's also meant to be a summer vacation for them. So it's kind just, of...
This doesn't seem fun to me.
You know? No, I mean, as a kid, I'd be like, this sucks. I mean, we did a haunted house when I was a Boy Scout, and it blew. It was super lame. I had to put makeup on for it, and I never did it again, except every day now. I mean, a little mascara.
It could have been a bit interesting if maybe you got to see, like, the way they use their quirks in order to try and be scary and stuff, but you would have to do something really impressive, I think.
Like,
they go to all the trouble.
The only important thing to come out of this is that we've now launched a new ship, the Yuri ship of Asue and Uraraka. That was what this was all about.
I'm sure.
It already has a name. It took Brawla about 3 minutes to find it on Twitter. She's our... I feel like she's unofficially Weekly Manga Recap's lesbian consultant. Because the first moment a pairing happens, she tweets us and lets us know about it.
We also have it established, because everyone's like, okay, so the class is divided into pairs, but we're missing 5 from our class. That means that one person left on their own, and as luck would have it, it's Deku. So that is important to establish that he's not somewhere, everyone else is in pairs. And a whole bunch of people are like, to be like, hey, you should switch with me, you should switch with me. Which, I don't know if they actually successfully switch, or if they're stuck with the people they originally end up with, because I think the only ones we actually see are Uraraka and Suyu.
Yeah.
We see Mineta, but we don't see who's with him. We just see one of the pussycats nearby. Anyhow, so we see the other class. They're like, okay, we'll use this, you know, we'll use this and this, and so on and so forth. And they mention at one point, oh yeah, Bakugo and Todoroki are going to totally wet themselves. And they just imagine, I guess they try and do it, or maybe they're imagining it, I don't know. But Todoroki just kind of goes, oh. Because he's Todoroki.
Yeah.
Anyhow, the Scarers are attacked by the villains, and they start getting taken out. We see that the scarred guy seems to have this ability to create gas from touching... I'm not sure what he's doing. If he's burning the trees, or if he's creating... If someone else is creating the poison gas.
Or if he's creating poison gas that the trees then, like, carbon dioxide into the air and then releases the poison out that way. I think
he is doing something to the trees.
Yeah.
But we don't have a full idea of what his quirk is yet. And we see Suyu and Uraraka, of course, have no idea that, you know, what's going actually going on.
I'm coming to get you!
Oh, yeah!
I'm about to torpedo this new ship!
Oh, God. Anyhow. So, also, one of the pussycats ends up getting taken down by that scaly guy.
Love interest! Waifu!
Yeah. And,
this wouldn't have happened if I got the big tiger first!
Aww. It looks
Pixie Bomb! There we go. Now I know. Forever.
It looks as though the one creating the poison gas is the guy with the stormtrooper gas mask thing. Because we see it. Because that, you know, that makes sense. Wear a gas mask, have the poison gas ability. But also there's a picture of him like this, with the gas around them. And so yeah, Mina ends up coming across Pixie Bob is her name. Having been knocked out by two of the villains. Deku and Tiger and Ida and Koda are all nearby. So everyone's like, oh crap, there's villains here. And Deku immediately realizes Koda could be in danger. And we see Koda up in his hideaway place, and there's a cloaked figure sneaking up on him.
Dun, 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 dun.
Lots of small things in this chapter. You know, it's like, okay, well, they're thinking about this, they're thinking about this, you know, this is the lesson that they're talking about, and so on and so forth. I get the feeling that maybe those kids who were taking the remedial lessons are gonna play a role in this coming conflict, because they aren't getting ambushed, so they have a chance to shine, potentially.
Then there's also 10 villains out there, so it's almost kind of like saying, like, a couple of characters are gonna get the chance to shine here. Like, even if Aizama and all of the all their main pussycats take out one of the villains, it's still like 4 or 5 of them out there that you're like, some of the kids are going to have to handle these.
Right.
I'm still just not really like sold enough on Koda to care. Like, I just don't have enough for him yet. So that is like,
I still don't really like him. Yeah.
And it's just that thing of, like, kid characters that are introduced into a series always kind of have like an uphill battle to fight. Because you're like, God, you're fucking annoying. You just got introduced. But I like the new villain group. I think they look kind of, you know, a lot of them have kind of cool designs. And I'm curious to see how all their abilities are and get, like, real fights going on. This itself wasn't a great chapter, but I think it's building up to what should be a very interesting arc.
Do we want to talk about Nisekoi at all?
He gets his head out of his ass.
Basically, yeah.
Essentially, Raku finally realized, like, oh, He finishes the chapter like, I have to decide one way or the other which girl I'm going to go with. And we kind of, a little bit of a time skip into the start of their senior year. So Nisekoi is ending, but it's not done yet. But we are essentially into the third act of the story, you could say. It's a good chapter. This is 200, so this is a big chapter for it. And it's nice to see we've kind of gotten past the seven different girls who have affections for him. How are they all
going to react? Right, you know, it actually took a kind of a logical progression because, you know, you've got, you know, stories where, I guess, two of the girls have completely kind of just dropped out of the running. And, you know, so you've had Yui, who's basically, okay, well, she's gone. Marika, yep, she's basically gone. She's not giving up, but she's essentially done. And it looks as though we're going to have some focus on Haru. I think that's Haru at the end of the chapter. So potentially, maybe she'll actually finally give up on Raku at this point.
I assume she would. It seems like such a dick move to be like, I'm going to keep going after the dude my boy, my sister has a crush on.
It seems like the right time to do that because, you know, it's established like, okay, Raku knows he's in love with both Onodera and Chitage, so maybe we should actually officially write off these last few hangers-on. I imagine there's going to be something with Sugumi.
Yeah, and it might be nice at this point to actually start building, I guess, like the cheerleading sides for each side, because we already have Yuri, or is that her name? The glasses girl?
Yui.
With Yumi, with Onodera. So with Haru, Yui, whatever. I mean, I need letters to her name. Yuki Tatsu. Anyway.
Yuki.
I'm like, Yitsubishi Yabatomo.
So anyway, Yuppie is.
But yeah, like if they build up, like here, you know, these side characters who have decided, you know, realize like, all right, it's not going to work out, but I will support. It's like picking a candidate. They're like voting. They're like, I will support you, Donald Trump, a.k.a. Onodera. And that is my secret, subtle way to create backlash against Onodera being the right girl. I'm gonna get Chitoge her win by the most underhanded mind tactics possible.
I'd say that might backfire, but honestly, I don't think there are too many Trump supporters who read manga.
There's gotta be like two, right?
I'm
rooting for the Trump haters who are like, I fucking hate Trump. Thus, I hate Onodera. She's the Trump of this series.
Okay, let's move on to One Piece. Chapter 811, Roko, with a two-page color spread of just straw hats hanging out, hauling oranges around for some reason. Right. Are those oranges, or are they something else?
I think they're... I'm trying to remember if Nami has an orange grove or a tangerine glove. I think they're tangerines.
Oranges. I think she has oranges.
I thought they were tangerines. Maybe I might be overthinking it, or I might be thinking of the dub. But anyway, the only thing that I wanted to note on it was that they have Disekoi Panda back there at the clothing store, which is like one of the like most obscure pieces of One Piece lore possible. But also Sanji's drinking a drink called Lady Coffee that it looks like the tagline is all women are great or all women are gorgeous, something along that line, which I think is a very strange name, just like tagline to sell your coffee drink with.
All women are great. Our coffee is female, therefore...
Yeah, this coffee is going to be really good.
It's a nice looking picture. Also, the Going Merry is there, it looks like. Oh, no, is that just the mini ship that goes out of the Sunny Go?
Yeah, Mini Merry or whatever it's called.
So, we continue the flashback from when when Sanji's group arrived on Zoe. And they observed that, you know, the gas had been used against the people. And Cedar Clown reacts to this, and he's like, oh, yes! This gas named Kono! It is a can of gas of my own making! And now I understand why Chopper was wearing a football helmet. It's so that he can headbutt Cedar Clown with it. And Cedar Clown's like, oh, no, wait! I wasn't the one who used it! Now stop!
I do like how he defends himself. Like, he's like, ah, it's a killer gas of my own making! Oh, it's so wonderful! And everyone beats him. He's like, why? I didn't even use it! I'm just talking about how great it is! Everyone, like, gives, like, the obvious reason. Like, it wouldn't have hurt anybody if you didn't make it. It's just, I'm like, well, I didn't... I, come on, how are you blaming me for this?
Yeah. So everyone's like, oh, you know how to... Trevor's like, you know how to neutralize the gas, so do it, do it. And Super Clown's like, oh, well, wait, don't assume the losers here were the good guys. The Minks are well known for their hatred of humans and their fighting ability. Leaving them well enough alone is for your own good. The moment we save them, they'll tear us to shreds. But at that moment, suddenly, Zo's spout goes off and starts pouring water on them. Which, I guess, alerts them when Nami cries out. So because of that, Sanji runs off, but he says to Caesar Clown, okay, you better have eliminated your poison from this place by the time I get back. Otherwise, I'm going to crush your heart. So Caesar Clown's like, fine, and Sanji runs off. He takes out... I don't know if this guy's name was ever actually mentioned. Anyhow,
I guess his name might have been introduced during that, because this is all scenes we saw in that
Sheepshead. Sheepshead is his name.
Yeah. We all saw in that during that like one
right
shot of this arc, essentially prior to the yeah beginning,
where we saw that one very short sequence when we cut away from Dressrosa. So yeah, that's where that takes place, and then Caesar Clown's like, oh, I'm doing this under protest, and he releases his Kuro neutralizing gas, Roko. He neutralizes the gas, and Chopper calls everyone over, and he wants to, I guess, start helping people. But everyone is all there in one place at last. Sanji mentions, you know, according to Gassy, that's just a rude nickname. The Minks are very ferocious, and so they might end up actually regretting saving them. But then Wanda, wearing a hat, I guess, rushes in and tries to attack. And so she first attacks Nami, and Nami uses her climb attack to stop it. And everyone's like, oh no, we gotta stop her! And Nami's like, no, it's okay, I can actually defend myself. Which goes to show just how horribly weak from the gas she is, if Nami can take her out in hand-to-hand combat.
Although, to be fair, Nami does do a pretty impressive maneuver where she, like, cartwheels underneath Wanda's attack and then kind of, like, brings her down.
Uh-huh.
It's impressive maneuvering for Nami. I would have imagined she would have just been like, I'm going to make illusions and then put a thundercloud in her butt.
Wanda has a stick of dynamite in her hand, and she says, I'm going to take you out with me, and she demands to know, what grudge do you have against us, and what do you stand to gain by killing us? The one you seek is not here, and how much of our thousand-year history must you destroy before you're satisfied? And Nami just, you know, stares down at her, and, someone else. I don't know who that is.
Which one? The guy who says, like, Wanda?
Tristan, I guess. Says, they saved me, and, you know, all of Jack's men are gone, so they don't have any connection to him and stuff. So they basically talk Wanda down, a whole bunch of them do. And so they extinguish the dynamite, which I think... Who is that that actually does that?
It looks like it's Pedro.
Oh, okay. He actually walks over and is like, nope, yeah, don't blow him up. Chopper, you know, is suddenly very urgent. Is like, the gas has been here for a day, so if we don't cleanse and detoxify everyone who was here, then we're not going to be able to save them. We've got to hurry and we've got to treat everyone. We can't waste a single second. I don't have enough tools and supplies, so gather up anyone who can help me. And he takes charge and basically rounds up all the people who are capable of helping and is like, yo, come on, let's do this. And Wanda starts to cry and she says, are you going to help us? And Nami says, yes, we won't abandon a single one of you. And we get this montage of them helping out. Caesar Clown being like, I can't believe I have to save these people. God damn it.
I want to imagine that's happening while like a cheesy like montage song, like, oh, it's on fire. And the entire time it's just him like with the Kermit the Frog face, like,
this is a catchy song, though.
Yeah. I hate helping people, but I love this song.
Yeah. Oh, I love all the Rocky films, especially Creed. That's really good.
It's just in the background, like Sanji doing like the fucking wooden horse thing. They're like, this doesn't help people. He's like, oh, what was I supposed to do over here? I can't help people. I can kick people. I didn't help them.
I could kick the poison out of them.
Yeah, could I kick it out of them?
Meanwhile,
I can have sex with all the pretty animal ladies.
It's no bestiality.
Yeah, they have women parts, I think.
So you're kind of like, okay, best Rocky film is the first one. Worst Rocky film.
And obviously five, but...
Counting down his list.
He's having a discussion with no one. Like, Chopper's like, I've never seen a Rocky movie. He just keeps going on. Two is very good, too, but in a way, the cheesy qualities of three and four maybe put them above it for me.
I've only seen Raging Bull, I'm sorry. Oh, no, you've gotten to see Rocky.
Just slaps him. Like, we're straight off the elephant. He's like, why? That's a better movie.
Sylvester Stallone made that movie with his own blood, sweat, and tears.
He should have an Oscar. If he doesn't this year, there's no justice in the world.
We're going to have to remember this every time we bring up Caesar Clown, his love of Rocky films.
It's the only franchise he likes, too. He's like,
every other movie I've seen, I've wanted to poison the actors.
Force Awakens was a shameless redo of New Hope. They're like, yeah, well, Creed was just a shameless redo of Rocky. I'm fucking like a knife through the heart. He's like, maybe you're right. And is that knight like, like out of the closet?
He like tries to kill them in like the most inefficient way possible.
Screaming like, out the maneuver as he goes,
suffocate them with a pillow. Wait a minute, I have gas powers when he gets kicked in the face.
I could literally just inject you with numerous, almost infinite amount of poisonous gases. Why do I choose the slowest, most easily against my own physical limitations and balance of getting people possible? I would get you for insulting, Creed. I will take you out through a rear naked choke. Watch all of the air disappear from your lungs! Like, don't you, can't you just turn into carbon dioxide and just kill us immediately? Fuck you! Tomorrow! You get yours!
They just put on one of the Rocky films. He's like, oh, I'm instantly happy now.
Oh, these are great.
Okay.
Mickey!
Flashback ends with everyone having been cured. Giving a big victory shout, and Wanda, you know, kind of caps the whole thing off by saying, like, you had no idea who we are, but you rushed to save our lives, so I'll never forget this death for the rest of my life. And she hugs Nami, starts licking her, because that's what dogs do.
Dogs are sweet like that.
Even when they love you, they are annoying. So, Frankie, of course, you know, starts freaking out, like, I'm so proud of you, cats! But, you know, of all his overreactions, this, I think, seems pretty deserved. You know, they saved a whole people. And Luffy says, that Jack guy really ticks me off. Someday I'm gonna kick his ass. Because he's Luffy. And Brooke mentioned something, you know, voicing the suspicion that you mentioned, a lot of people have held, you know, Brooke points this out and then Wanda finishes up for him. Yeah, I don't know if he's actually dead, you know, because we saw the obituary, but she's like, yeah, it seems hard to believe considering.
Yeah. He was on 100 billion or 1 billion Barry Bounty. That seems so huge. Why would they have killed him off so quickly? You're like, Wanda? What are you referring to? Why would who kill him off so quickly?
Wanda's, because she's a fan of the Straw Hats, she's also a One Piece fan girl.
She's like the Deadpool of this series. Just
she's going to end up meeting up with Bartolomeo and they're going to dissect the series and point out their favorite parts. Okay. Let's see here. Chopper heads off so that he can see to Cat Viper. And Wanda says, oh, and take Warnie. Who's Warnie?
That's, are those the Squirrel mounts? Girl, isn't it?
Are those the mounts? I don't know.
I thought it's the Squirrel Girl I met at the beginning. Oh, no, that's Carrot. Never mind.
Yeah.
No, no, then.
She's a rabbit girl.
Whatever.
And Rob points out, so shouldn't you be sleeping? It's like, no, I'm what's called a king's bird. I act as a go-between for the two kings, so I'm, I guess, constantly awake? No. So they go off to meet Cat Viper. They ride these weird, those weird alligator mounts from before. Kara mentions she's also Kingsbird. Has anything happened at all?
I mean, we get...
They talk about Sanji a little bit.
But... Yeah, well, that's the big thing, is that kind of Zoro brings up, like, hey, yeah, when you told that story about everything that happened, Sanji and Caesar were still involved in the story. Why aren't they involved anymore? And Brooke brings up, like, oh, well, that's the thing. We actually have been hiding something from even the people of this kingdom, because a lot of shit was kind of going on with them at once already. But something horrible happened a couple days ago, and Sanji might actually never return to us.
And Brooke is like, steal yourselves for the tail.
And I love that when Luffy hears this news, when he's like, Sanji might never return to us, he's like, what? But he said he'd come back! He wrote it in his letter! Like, he's like, this is law!
So, they mentioned, you know, like, look, he had to leave, but, you know, it's really difficult to find this place because it's a living animal, and even if you use a log pose, it's very difficult to actually find it. And we made a mistake and failed to take one thing into account. When we first pulled away from the enemy ship, we let them hear our destination. And on that ship was a resident of this mysterious island. In other words, 2 days ago, the Big Mom Pirates appeared here. And we go into another flashback where, I forget his name, but
Pecker.
The lion guy.
Pecker.
Pecker. You know, is getting in contact with Big Mom, and he says, leave it to me, because Zoe is my hometown. So.
It's interesting, and this poses more, like, credence to the notion that something more serious has happened with Sanji than just, like, oh, you know, he fucking saw a hot squirrel girl and his nose bled so much, and now he's, you know, he's run off in shame or something like that. It's like, no, he actually probably did do something along the lines of sacrificing himself to get Big Mom away. Maybe he gave himself up. Maybe he, you know, took some other, you know, one of the smaller ships of the Going Merry or the Thousand Sunny, and they're chasing him away or something like that. But he's basically put himself at risk to divert Big Mom, because she's not there when the Straw Hats get there. And we also don't really know how Caesar Clown's involved with that. But I would actually be kind of interested to see if... Because I imagine this isn't going to be a terribly long arc. Oda likes to usually slow things down or do something a little bit shorter in between his larger arcs. So I'd actually be kind of interested to see if this leads to a bigger one and we have almost kind of like a Rescue Sanji arc or something like that. Because the circumstances here feel at least a little bit different than they have, you know, with like Arlong Park or Alabasta or Water 7, where those kind of elements played a little bit into it. It'd be intriguing to see.
Yeah, so let's move on to Toriko, I guess. I really don't have very much to say about this chapter. It's because it's, you know, it's a montage, really.
It's on fire!
Well, there's a lot of dialogue, so we can't do that. Yeah. There's a lot of narration.
I mean, Cormier, essentially, it's...
Gourmet 353 to the main one. The Eight Kings fight the gourmet demon things that pop up in their territories, and they cause horrible destruction everywhere.
I mean, they're, like, crazy awesome, and that's, you know, fun and goofiness and all that. And to that extent, I do enjoy it. But it is a chapter that's hard to really say much on, because it's basically like, here are what the Eight Kings do. They're all, you know, hideously powerful. Some of them actually have okay, quasi-good endings. Like, one of them's like, oh, I get to die forever, but it's okay, because I died happy or something like that. Like, oh, okay, fair enough.
There is a kind of cool part at first where Heracles uses his super breath and blasts it into the earth, and so it goes out through another side, and it ends up actually destroying the one that's fighting Bambina. That's where it pops up. That's a cool little moment.
And it's kind of cool that Bambina gets excited, because I guess that's when he realizes Heracles is still around, so he can keep fighting Heracles.
Mm-hmm. And we see stuff where, like, you know, the Emperor Crow casts its shadow up into the sky in order to fight the one there. The King Snake just hauls it up, like, light years into space in order to kill it. But basically, the note that we conclude on is the fact that Komatsu and everyone are going to, you know, meet up with everybody. And he recaps, like, okay, you know, we're going from Area 6, we're going to use our warp road and instantly get across the continent. We're going to go to Area 5, where Zebra and Brunch are. We're going to Area 4, where Sunny and Lightbearer are. Then Area 3, with Coco and Tylon. And then area two, and we're going to meet up with Toriko. Okay.
Who's Tywin? It's like the same thing I'm going to mention every time.
I'm right here!
I'm the poison chef! There's a poison chef?
Yes!
So that's it, man. Let's move on. World Trigger. 126. I'm not sure what the chapter title is, but I'm sure it's a part something.
Galapola Part 5. I just want to know, at this point, because we're on Hitbox, we do the weekly poll, and this is, I guess, the chapter that's within second place this week, according to the fans. People liked One Piece a lot, but this is number two, so curious to see the reaction.
It was a little bit of a slow week. I mean, you mentioned that. I mean, I was kind of happy with most of the selection, but I did have kind of difficulty because, like, nothing really stood out too much.
Well, I'm preparing for next week when we do our 2015 recap, and, like, one of the things is to talk about where each series was at the beginning of last year. So this year, I just, at this time, I was like, why don't I take a chance to get ahead of the curve, and I'll write down what the first chapters of 2016 were like so I can easily look back at it next year. And as I wrote it down, I was like, holy crap, like, Black Clover kind of had something that's very easily identifiable. Like a couple other ones, but a lot of the chapters this week are kind of hard to describe because you're like, not a lot happens in it. Like, yeah. Food Wars is a little bit easy. I'm like, oh, it's the celebration and a zombie shows up. But this one, you're like,
there was a, it was Jin in the finds middle out of the fight with Galapalo.
Yeah, and, Jin finds out Yotaro is going to chase after Husei?
I actually, one of the things I got for Christmas was all the printed volumes of World Trigger.
Great gift. And,
yeah. So, I looked in the back where it has all the bonus stuff, and it mentions that Yostro's side effect is actually being able to speak with animals, which, was that ever actually brought up before?
No, but I don't think it's, I don't know if it's actually a, like, a factor in the series. It might be, like, a superfluous bit of information.
That right, uses so, it mentions, like, yeah, he can talk to animals, but Raijin Mara doesn't tend to listen to what he says.
Yeah, it's probably, if it's that phrasey, too, it's also maybe just a joke, too. Like, it's maybe, like, a canon thing, but it's just a joke that he has. Like, the same thing where he's like, oh, if Osamu and what's-his-name ever got in, like, a competition, like, one of them would have to turn gay or something, or become a biker because they both couldn't have the same, like, nerdy gimmick.
So, we start on Husei, who, of course, has left Tamakoma 2 and is, you know, trying to reunite with someone from Galapala, and he's like, okay, I hear the sounds of battle over there, but, you know, what am I going to do? What should I do in order to make contact? And then we cut over to the battlefield and this kind of rush of a lot of stuff as people clash surrounding scruffy goatee guy from Galapala. And he has an interesting ability where his shield is kind of liquidy. So, what's his name? Spear guy. Shit.
I know it vaguely. Yo something. Yo Garo. Yo Taro. Yo.
Is it Yonea? Yonea, right?
Yeah, it's some yo something. Spear dude.
So he uses.
Annalise is going to be screaming at us in like 2 seconds.
No. Yonea tries to use the spear, and the guy blocks it, and it gets like. The blade gets coated in this weird gel, and then when he tries to use the spear on one of the other neighbors, it doesn't work anymore. It has basically dulled the edge. So, interesting effect. Then, you know, more fighting. Yonea basically...
You sounded so angry there. You're like, fuck this!
Well, there's nothing, like, particularly noteworthy. Because it's just like, well, they're fighting, you know, little robot things that aren't very... They're really just foot soldiers. Yonea gets another spear out. He tries to attack the guy again. And he does this really cool thing where he slashes downward, retracts the blade as it's passing into the guy's arm that's covered in the jelly shield, and then it goes back out when it goes beyond it, so then he manages to cut off the guy's foot. It's really cool. It's a really cool little sequence.
And I like his joke. He's like, I go after the legs a lot these days.
So... Galapala is trying to basically change their strategy in order to react to all of the border agents that are attacking them. Yomi, the coordinator, is told, okay, I'll try and re-coordinate this stuff. Do you want me to go in? We cut over to where Nasu Squad is
fighting. Hold on, Nick. Big news happens. He notes, like, Reggie, he's going to need your help. Because the Maiden soldiers are converging, including hashtag second best character, third best character in the series, Nehemia. That fucking dapper ass suit, man! He's coming in. He's like, I'm going to swag this shit up. Because I'm awesome. I'm better than you in every way, and you know it.
We also have a Kakao Squad featured there.
Nasu Squad
is fighting with the female Galapalo soldier, and she summons more. She, like, casts out these portals for more dogs to come in and to help her. And then she tries to attack them. Eventually she throws out a smoke bomb. And so, Nasu and, oh gosh, what's her name? Black hair, Nasu Squad Girl. Shit.
That ass Brawla. She sent me like 4 fan fictions about the Yuri romance between her and Nasu. So
they get back
to Kumagai. They
get back to back after they find each other in the smoke. But then suddenly Nasu realizes that, oh, it's not really her. It's you know, the Galapalo soldier in disguise. And they're like, shit, I shouldn't have fallen for that because we knew that they could disguise themselves as Trion soldiers. So, you know, why wouldn't they be able to disguise themselves as us? So that's a cool little bit, throw off that and then get the opening that way. But nothing really too much comes of it because nobody seems to have been injured in any of those exchanges.
Well, she cuts off Nasu's arm.
Does she?
Yeah, she cleaves her one arm
right off. There it is. Yeah, okay.
So it's actually a pretty, probably not fatal, but probably definitely like a very short time frame left for her in that Trion body.
Yeah, you see it leaking out of her now that I look at it closer. And she's very offended that she used the disguise. Like, how dare you do that? All's fair, you know?
Yeah.
We cut to the main group from Galapalo, their leader and not his son.
Let's just say his son. Let's just fucking get in front of that one.
And so they're very close to their target, to the away ship, and they're like, okay, well, there wasn't too much interference, but maybe they know what we're up to, so who knows?
Well, we can't be sure. That wasn't Christopher Walken at all. I feel they suspect what we're up to.
So basically they're like, it was kind of easy to get here, so maybe there's a trap waiting, basically. Then we cut to Kazama and Murakami and Jin and Konami. And Kazama's like, okay, let's see. That's where they are. He's kind of relaying all the information they've learned from everyone else. And so Jin's just like, oh, well, you know, I think it looks like we've got Forza on our side, but I feel sorry for the people facing this lineup. And Konami's like, you really shouldn't laugh it off, because according to Jin's foresight, you get split in two.
It's actually a little bit of a reveal here, too, because, you know, we've known for the longest time Tachikawa's number one attacker, Kazama's number two, but we never knew who number three was, and they finally revealed to us that that's Konami. So it is a kind of an interesting little reveal there. Because also I thought Tamakoma 1 didn't participate in Rank Wars anymore. So kind of interesting she's still ranked, but It is a pretty badass lineup to have kind of waiting there.
So Tachikawa was just like, well, looks like I'm going to enjoy this. Not disturbed by the news of his possible death at all.
But I love that excitement. I love that excitement for him too. Like, ooh, I'm gonna get a shit awesome ass fight if there's a chance I might die in it.
So Jin then is, you know, kind of like, okay, what should I do? I've got to, you know, try and make the best of my ability. Maybe I should go help people inside. Maybe I should look at the opponents outside so I can see their plans better. And then suddenly he stops. Cut over to Yotaro, who is riding on Raijin Maru, apparently going to try and find Husei. And Jin just says to himself, wait, you're going there?
The only thing I didn't get, he needs actual visualization on the person to see their future path, right? Mm-hmm. So how did he, like, what did he use to get a glimpse of Yotaro? Unless he's not referring to Yotaro.
Oh, he's seen Yotaro before.
But doesn't he actually have to see him?
I think he just has to have seen them.
Yeah, okay.
So he's like never seen the people from Galapalo before.
Oh, okay. So that's all right. That's fair enough then. You know, this is a fine chapter. It's not a great chapter, but I think it's just because this is the format we're in. I think when this chapter is in the collected volume, and I can kind of read it, you know, in the series of chapters all at once, I think it will be a much more enjoyable chapter overall. But this
chapter, gonna be something that's gonna be in like the middle of a volume or something like that.
Yeah, this chapter in and of itself didn't particularly do all that much for me.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff this week was, you know, setting up stuff in the future or coming down from stuff that had just happened. It was, you know, just one of those things where there weren't very many high points in really anything this week. If you look at everything, you know, Black Clover was just like the turning point of Gouch getting ready to rejoin the battle, but there wasn't very much action actually going on. Bleach, you had some punching going on, but it was really more just, okay, well, Yushiro is joining the fight now. Fairy Tail was infuriating. Food Wars was, you know, the aftermath. My Hero Academia was preparation for the battle coming up. One Piece was more explanation of what's going on. Toriko was just kind of establishing stuff that's going on. World Trigger is setting up for stuff. Yeah, so, like, literally, like, every series this week was just something more important is going to happen, building upon what happened this week. So
there could be only one, though, Nick. Gotta pick a winner.
Yep. Let's do our favorite series of the week. The audience has chosen One Piece with 29.6% of the vote. Not a dominant selection, but, you know. Four series in second place, as we mentioned before. My pick for series of the week, I'm going to have to give it to Nisekoi again. Because...
I want to interrupt you real quick. Infamous is being a big bitch in the chat room, like, all your fans pick One Piece is bullshit fanboys. This is the first time that One Piece has won the fan vote, hasn't it?
No, it isn't.
Isn't it? I feel like it doesn't mean it that often.
This is the third time.
I feel like it's been very often been like My Hero Academia wins it, or like Food Wars wins it. One Piece has not been like the number one pick every week, but he still comes in, oh, you fanboys, all you.
It's been My Hero Academia, Food Wars, One Piece, and One Piece and My Hero Academia both have been chosen three times. So.
Yeah. So it's not like a dominating sweep.
Although I am surprised because Nisekoi is like now like my, it's the one I've chosen the most, it looks like. But, you know, it didn't have too stiff competition this week, and it was actually a very important chapter, and I'm glad that we actually builds upon the progression that was made last week. Or not last week, but last chapter. You know, we go from, you know, Rocket getting his head out of his ass and realizing, oh, I'm in love with her, to actually making logical progressions based on that thought. It's like, I actually do have to make this choice, and, you know, but, oh, wait, Chitika said she has a crush on someone, but could she potentially mean me? I can't believe he actually made that leap. Usually when you get to this point in this stuff, that never occurs to anyone.
Yeah,
you
know, it might like, be like, oh, I have feelings for her, but she doesn't have them for me. There's a guy she likes.
He thinks maybe she does, because the way that she's been treating me and also the stuff that she's been saying about him, I could also see that as the way that she sees me. So he has to be kind of smart about it. And then he goes and he talks to Shu, because he's like, you know, in turmoil over this. And he actually makes, you know, some more progression based on that conversation, too. So it's like, yeah, all around, solid, I think.
I can totally get that. I think it was a good chapter this week. I'm going to start off 2016 perhaps on a different foot, so to speak. I'm giving my chapter of the week to Black Clover, actually. I think of all the series this week, it was the one that kind of had the most interesting progression and existed as kind of like a whole chapter all the way through. So I enjoyed it for that regard. And just to kind of tie it up, my character of the week then is also Gouch. It's a character kind of left the most impact on me. I completely agree with you, though, on Nisekoi being good, and I considered giving it to Raku. But I couldn't give it to him on the sake of being like he finally got it. It took 200 chapters for this asshole to get it.
I'm just happy whenever I see progression out of that series, because when it actually does, you know, important stuff and it goes from one point to the next logically, it is actually really good. It's just frustrating that a lot of the time it spins its wheels. So.
Yeah. So I'm giving Black Clover it, and then Gaush is my character MVP.
Under the same logic of there wasn't too much that went on this week, I mean, honestly, I actually at one point was considering, maybe I'll give it to Izami just for that one panel of his face. But no, I'm also giving it to Gaush because that flashback.
Oh,
that
has, double Gaush.
Yeah, that flashback that he has did a lot for his character to actually get a serious side to, you know, the sister complex jokes and stuff. And I like that his characterization so far has been consistent. You know, he's not just suddenly like, oh, Asta's totally great. He's just like, oh, this guy's such an idiot, but I guess he isn't such an asshole, maybe. And also, he goes back for the reason of, you know, wanting to be a Sega example for his sister, as opposed to because it's the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Gaush for both of us. Piece score for me, Black Clover for you. One piece for the audience, so that covers that. All right. So, with
is
all
there
that
a link
said...
to that, then? Is there, like, a quick link to it?
Yeah, I can just...
is it a Google Doc?
It's a Google Doc, yes.
We need to get, like, a tiny URL for that, I think.
I mean, I can put it in the chat room. But...
Here we go.
Ah, so many anonymous animals are appearing now.
Rawr, I'm a tiger. Let's see here. I guess mine don't have any real sort of consistency to them. I'm all over the place.
No. I mean, I didn't seem to have my favorites. Well, but I've only chosen between... Well, I guess Fairy Tail's in there. Yeah.
Oh, God. I haven't named one person my character of the week like consistently twice. That's only been like 3 months to work with. It's going to be real hard to work with
It's only been like 2 months to work with.
Yeah.
I've only been doing this for a very short period of time.
I also put some weird choices in there, like Kodo, so that's why.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, the cool thing about doing, you know, having a character is that, you know... There's only so many series you can bring up, but if you have, like, a character of the week, then you can have some weird choices like that. So. All right. Anyway, we're going to wrap up now. So, everyone, thank you for listening and or watching Weekly Manga Recap this week. We record the show live on hitbox.tv/RoloT, normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change that up. So you can follow us on Twitter to stay updated. Chris is at RoloT, I'm at YRuler of Time, and we also have the official at WMR podcast account where official manga news and podcast news and stuff goes up as well. You can check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, also on YouTube, although I don't think that the shortened URL is available.
Still. Shortened probably won't exist until like March or so. It's going to be a little bit of time.
So like search for Weekly Manga Recap and I think you'll find it.
And then just subscribe to it, and then that way you're bookmarked if you don't like subscribing or whatnot.
And also, we're on iTunes, where, you know, make sure, you know, you leave a comment, leave a rating, subscribe to us however you can. We thank you for all the feedback you guys give us. Do you have any special things we want to mention?
I don't have it open, and I can't open it at the moment.
We'll make sure to bring it up next time, maybe. All right. Also, be sure to, you know, send critiques and questions and suggest future manga for us to read. You can send all that stuff to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, because your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy, like the bonus pod, the Why Me Scrooge radio play that we did last month. It is really good. You should check it out if you're not subscribed already.
Immensely awesome. And a special thanks to Alexander Hernandez and Aaron Bueller, our newest patrons. Is greatly appreciated, guys. Your support cannot be told enough. Also, as a note, I know it happens every so often when a new month rolls around and people get charged. Check to make sure your payment went through, because I know a couple people get declines, and sometimes that's something that happens on Patreon's part. So if you get like that notice, or just check in, make sure yours went through. That way you can access the site when the next bonus pod comes up and get that stuff. So... that'll be there. And there is groundwork coming in for some new stuff to come out through the Patreon. And perhaps a new tier, even. I can't say much on it now, because nothing's decided. But there are big plans to continue to happen with Patreon through 2016. We're not stopping. Never be happy. I'm like Matthew McConaughey in his Oscar speech. where every day I look to myself 10 years from now, and I'm still hosting a manga podcast out of my bedroom.
And also, we want to thank the people who have made contributions to the podcast to help to make it what it is. Special thanks go out to Steve Manor Tucker, as you can draw his work at a billion different websites. There's his DeviantArt, which is New Rock Fanboy. He's got his own Patreon, which is Steve Man. He has a Tumblr. He's got a couple of Tumblrs, I think. But thank you to all your awesome art, dude. And special thanks to Felix Stark, also the Infamous Planet. I said the again. I shouldn't do that. You were so awesome, and you helped us out with that with radio play. Infamous Planet is one of my favorite parts of the radio play we did.
I want to cut a clip of it out to like play during an episode to like kind of like tease it a little bit for the people who haven't gotten it. And I'm trying, like, I'm like, do I put one of the Tiny Tim characters' bits in there? Because those are by far my favorite parts of that.
Oh, blimey.
By the way,
thank you, because Chris, you credited everyone who was involved, and I didn't remember to write the list down, because there were like almost 10 people who contributed their talents to that radio play, because I can't name everyone, because then it'll give it away.
It's spoiled. We've got some special guests.
Surprises. You guys know who you are. Thank you so much for the contributions you made, because it would not have been the same without all of you. Thank you.
Everyone put in fantastic performances all around. It was a joy to edit it, even as time pressuring as it might have been. It was a blast to do it, and it was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to more opportunities like that in the future.
So we will be having the first part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure soon, but I believe next week there's no manga.
There's no Jump next week. I think there may be Fairy Tale, but we're not going to do a weekly manga recap for just a chapter of Fairy Tale.
So we will be doing our annual manga recap next week, and that is a lot of fun to do because we go back over the last year. We talk about what our favorite series were to cover, what our least favorite series to cover were, what our favorite series of the year were, our least favorite series, and all that stuff.
About in 2015, because I went through and categorized all the jump starts and everything like that, and I was like, holy crap, this was running last year, technically, and stuff like
that. Yeah, because there were a lot of series that came and went in the year.
Oh, holy shit, Infamous Planet put a thing that says The Wire in it. Oh, let's see if it's any good. Oh, fuck you, this one sucks.
I don't know anything about The Wire. Black people, drugs. My name is not The Infamous Planet.
That one sucked. Boo! So many great Wire quotes you could have used.
But that is going to do it. That is what we're going to have next week at the annual manga recap. That's going to be all for this time. Thank you for joining us. And, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. Make your 2016 amazing. And, I don't have anything else to really do. I'm all out of props over here. Does this do anything for you? Like, I'm just like, hey, look, guys, it's a squeeze pump of hand sanitizer that I don't jack off with. I use it to clean my hands if I eat something particularly messy. Look, just because I have hand sanitizer over here and tissues over here, I was sick, everybody. Stop judging me. It's not gross. This is convenient. It's right next to my bed. If I have a lot of mucus buildup, I have tissues right here. Hand sanitizer right here. I often eat at my desk while I'm doing things. I can clean my... Look, I can clean my hands right here. And it just... Boom! That actually smells really... Ooh. Oh, it smells so alcoholic. What is this? Is this made with whiskey? Oh, it is. Well, that doesn't seem cleanly. All right. Anyway, guys, Merry Christmas.